Brian Noonan is distracting us.
Brian Noonan makes the world a better place, Wendy. You've heard me say that a million times, and I stand by it. How are you? Are you feeling okay? Seriously, don't give me the standard pet answer, oh yeah, I'm fine. You look to be in pain still. No, are you still in pain?
You know what? Bill, you ask me these questions because you act like you care, and I appreciate
that. I do act like I care.
Steve, I know you do care because you actually come down here and say, boy, how are you feeling? But right. The listeners don't care. And anytime, you know.
The listeners don't want you to be in pain.
Well, I think they care.
Some of them do, but not all of them.
You said you were twerking this morning. I think that's of interest to people.
I said tweaking. Not twerking. And I wasn't me, myself, and I.
Well, if you were twerking, that might be why your back hurts.
Can you separate the two for new listeners that don't know the difference between the tweaking and the twerking? What is the difference?
Well, I'm not tweaking. I have a tweaker in my back, so there's someone...
That could be the problem. You should have the tweaker taken out of your...
Twerking is a...
That's the Miley Cyrus move.
So how are you feeling, Wendy?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
You don't look good.
I'm supposed... You know, here's the thing, and it's so stupid. I have never thrown out my back.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I did it preparing for Thanksgiving and pulling my giant, ginormous Christmas tree from Tree Time out of the crawl space.
Oh, you're gonna blame this on Tree Time,
no,
aren't you?
No, I'm not, but it's never happened to me before, so I feel like a complete old lady.
Come on.
Going, I threw my back. Actually, I feel like an old man.
Do you?
Quite honestly.
Yeah.
And Steve, you've done the back issue. I mean, you're supposed to take it easy and relax.
You can't.
I thought, this is the perfect time for me to lay on the couch. I can't sleep in our bed because it's too soft.
Uh-huh.
And I have to kind of sleep sort of halfway upright. You know,
how do you do that?
Pillows. So I've been on the couch.
Diagonally? Are you sleeping diagonally?
No.
How do you do? I don't know how you would do it then.
You prop your back up with pillows so you're in more of a seated position than flat.
All right. That seems uncomfortable. And that's the only way you can sleep?
That would hurt my back.
That would hurt my... How could that... That makes it worse, I think.
I don't know. I tried various positions, and that seemed to be the best one.
I hope somebody just turned on the radio just then. That's what my hope
is. If not, listen to Nick DiDilio's show, because I am right. Featured on it frequently.
I know. It should be called the Wendy Snyder Show instead of the Nick DiDilio Show. So what will happen? They told you 3 days. It's been more than three days.
Well, they said, you know, my doctor said to relax, and I wasn't able to. I had a lot of things to do yesterday.
What did you have to do that was so important that you have to go through another day of this?
That's a good question.
I had to take one kid for a haircut at one time, and then I had to take another kid for a haircut at another time because I have to supervise.
And barbers are closed on Thursdays. We all know that.
I don't go to barbers. My kids have really long hair, so I have to supervise and make sure, God love Nancy at Bang, she does not take too much off. And she never does. I could really trust her, but she knows that it's best if I'm there.
I would think that somebody cutting the boy's hair would love the fact that you were nearby.
Right.
I would think
absolutely.
That would make the process go so much smoother.
I don't sleep if you're in pain.
Right. Right.
She did offer me a glass of wine.
That's why you go.
Yeah, but I didn't take it yesterday because that and muscle relaxers. You know what the problem is? I haven't had a drink in a while.
That's the problem.
I know.
Right.
I need to be loosey-goosey.
Ricky.
Kevin, can we have a picture of Cosmopolitans, please? For Wendy to make her feel better?
Yeah.
I don't drink Cosmopolitans. I can't even say it. Cosmetologies.
I think Wendy's got the problem solved, Kevin. Cancel the Cosmopolitans.
I just had a lot to do. Jim's had a lot of interviews for the Star Wars week happening. He's been doing a lot of interviews
with various
publications.
But that shouldn't hurt your back. If done properly, that should not affect your back.
No, but he's busy, so I got to do the other stuff.
Oh, I see. All right.
So, and I have to compliment King's because I did take home some of the ginger salmon yesterday because King's did a food drop-off we shared with the listeners, and they were lovely enough to give away two $50 gift cards. I have always been under the guise that I don't like salmon.
Mm-hmm.
This was the most amazing salmon I have ever had in my life.
I did that with salmon, too. No, I don't like salmon. Never mind. I don't want to eat salmon. And then you try and be like, wait a minute,
but
what
salmon, and everyone says, oh, you got to have it prepared correctly. You've said that to me.
I have told you that because bad salmon is really not good in any way, shape, or form. But if done properly, and they did do it properly.
Did you have some of that with the ginger salmon with some rice and some bok choy and baby carrots?
I didn't have that, but you know me. You could wax about food forever. You could, if you have a good meal,
You love to talk about it.
Can I just tell you really quickly?
Yeah.
When I love something, I want everyone else to love it too.
Right.
That's all. Sorry, I'm annoying.
With food, not annoying, but you do. Like if you have food of any kind, everybody knows what you've had and what was next to it, how it compares. And I don't do that with food. It just. All right. When I came in, I said to Kevin today, and we've talked about this on the show, I don't order ribs when I'm in a restaurant because it's a mess. I just don't get ribs.
And
the flavor does not warrant to me in ribs, even if they're really good. It's not worth the mess normally. I had their ribs from King's last night because they brought the food and I brought it home. Far and away the best ribs I've ever had. I don't know what they do to them that's different from any other place I've ever eaten it, but
They were really good.
They weren't that messy,
and the way that they were prepared, I can't even describe how good they were. I was just nuts with how good they were.
And the sauce was good. I mean, and that's why I brought that home, because I thought, you know, I'm not going to take time cooking.
Right.
I'm going to get home late. Plus, sitting in traffic doesn't help. Mm-hmm. I miss the protesters, thank God.
I don't know if they ever made it to... I was getting on Lakeshore Drive as they were announcing that they were trying to prevent them from getting to Lakeshore Drive. I don't know that ever happened. Did it, Steve? Did the protesters get to Lakeshore Drive at all?
I don't think they did. They went the other way on
Home
Street, I think. I don't know. I kind of tuned out after a while, too.
All right. Well, I want you to feel better. I know this has been a rough couple of days.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. But, I mean, there's nothing I can do. I just thought this was a perfect opportunity for me, who loves to lay on the couch playing Candy Crush or Cookie Jam. I did up myself a few levels, but I just wanted to sit there for like 20 hours and do it. And I had a doctor's excuse to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, with the holidays, I haven't done any Christmas shopping. I'm stressing out. So I think it's time for me to take my muscle relaxers.
All right. Let's see if the show changes in pacing and tone after Wendy takes her muscle relaxers. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in on this or any other topic you hear today. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, the debate rages on now. We were talking about this a little bit off air, so let's bring it on air. A lot of people unhappy with Rahm Emanuel for several reasons, and then equally as unhappy with his press conference yesterday.
They're calling for his head.
People want his head. They want Mayor Rahm Emanuel's head. So we were trying to figure out, because if you watched any of the news sources yesterday, I was flipping around a little bit last night, and the topic came up that Rahm Emanuel should be ousted, no longer be the mayor of the city of Chicago.
A recall.
That's what they've suggested, that they do a recall election.
I thought they'd do it when, like, your airbag is going to send glass into your face. That's a recall.
That's also a recall.
I didn't know you could recall
a mayor?
Sitting mayor.
Well, remember with Blagojevich, we were in kind of similar straits where they were talking about how do we figure out how to recall him.
Send him to jail.
Or we could send him to jail. We could, I guess. They're not.
There's no recall in Illinois.
They can't, right, Steve?
No.
It's impossible.
And, you know, the difference between Rod Blagojevich and Rahm Emanuel is one is a question of leadership and effectiveness. The other was a question of crime.
It was a straight
criminal
crime.
Activity.
Yeah.
You know, so this is where people might disagree with the job that Rahm Emanuel's done, but it's not to the level of a criminal conviction or anything like that. So they're very different.
So with what's gone on of late, and especially yesterday with the press conference, is the suggestion then not so much that there be a recall, although I was hearing the phrase, we need to recall him and stuff like that.
There are a couple legislators, Bill, who are introducing a law that would allow for recall.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, I don't think it's probably going to go very far, but so that's probably what you heard.
All right, but with the protests of, let's just go with yesterday, are they then suggesting that he just flat out steps down and says, this isn't a job that's working out. It's time for me to leave and good luck. Is that what they're hoping for?
That's what they're hoping for.
All right.
And I don't see him resigning.
No.
I don't see Anita Alvarez. She has said she's not resigning. And now especially, they feel that this is a time to demonstrate change.
Right.
There is no way either of those two are stepping down.
I don't see it.
I'm sure there are precedents for it, but I can't ever think of a sitting mayor resigning over a problem like this.
Can
it
I
doesn't
ask,
happen.
What about this?
It probably shouldn't happen. I mean, he was elected by a majority of the people to do the job, and he needs to do the job.
When Marion Barry was the mayor of Washington, D.C., and he had a scandal, a drug scandal, among other problems.
He was into crack cocaine?
Yeah.
Was that it?
I can't remember.
I can't keep my my crimes and my political people separate.
I'm trying to remember his situation where he was no longer in office. Did he step down? How did they oust him from office? What happened with Marion Barry? Do you remember?
I don't remember for sure. I know he did time. I mean, he actually went to prison.
I know. And then came back and was mayor again.
He was elected after that.
Right.
So I don't know if he resigned upon his conviction or if he was beaten and then convicted. I don't remember that, Bill.
How bad must the guy have been who ran opposite him for mayor of Washington, D.C. when he got beat by the guy who was the mayor and had to leave in scandal because of a cocaine problem? So then he runs again and became the mayor. It doesn't make any sense.
The mayor for life.
Mayor for life. What about this? Many people have suggested that Mayor Emanuel has much higher political aspirations, that at some point I've heard people say, that's a guy who at some point would run for president. He would want to be the president. Does what's going on here right now, does this put an end to that, or does it make it just a lot more difficult?
Well, he's in the middle of a very choppy sea right now, and he just wants to get to the shore on this one, I think. I don't know.
Worry about the future later?
Yeah, you know, and he kind of bypassed the chance to, he might have been in line to be speaker one day, and he came back to be mayor here, so I don't know what this would do. I mean, it certainly wouldn't help his presidential aspirations, but if that ever comes, that's going to be a long time from now.
Yeah, too. I would think. I would imagine. All right, we've got a couple calls. Can we take a call or two? We're at 312-981-7200 talking about Rahm Emanuel's situation.
How about Roger? Hi, Roger.
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Good. Yeah, it can't be done. I know you guys reported since, like last night and early this morning that, you know, there's actually two state representatives looking into it. They're reporting that, but that they want to get a special election for the city council, form up a bill. Unfortunately, neither one of them are out of bed yet, so that the reporting on that is, I mean, simply put, this is a group of black representatives from the House, you know, that are making this the shooting thing into a completely racial thing, which it's not.
So you say he's not going anywhere, get used to it.
Well, that's not even the topic isn't Emanuel.
Yeah.
The topic is how everybody else is acting, like how goofy they're acting over one incident. You think Emanuel wanted somebody dead?
No.
In fairness, it is not one incident. There have been several incidents there probably is a racial component to him, but not altogether. I mean, you have an African-American police commander on trial right now he's accused of abusing his position. So it's not all, you know, black, white, white, black.
No, and it's also not, we don't have 13,000 police officers in a city of nearly 2.8 million. And the other thing that's not being reported as well is there are hundreds of these shootings on the books. You want to know why? Because the ammunition that the Chicago Police Department gets issued is no better than paper punching. This is what the city has created. They wanted to have it where if they did have to use a weapon, they're going to give them a 14 or 15 shot automatic gun, okay? And you're going to have to shoot a guy who weighs 200 pounds six times unless you hit a vital organ.
Well, or unless it slows them down, one shot could do it. Why don't you shoot for the knee and take them down? Why? I mean, these guys are good shots, I would think. Why don't you shoot for the hand with the knife in it? I there are too many questions, and Roger, we thank you so very much for the call, but we have Louis Anderson coming up. We'll discuss this with him.
We will talk about this with Louis Anderson. We'll get to the bottom of this. He'll give us his thoughts on this. Steve has the news, and then a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We shall continue talking about Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Some people are demanding a recall, and the mayor should be ousted. He should resign. Anita Alvarez thrown into the mix as well. Someone just, you know, I had mentioned police officers shooting. Can't you shoot for the knee and knock them down, or mm-hmm. You know, shoot to aim and get the hand so he drops the knife. Maybe mm-hmm. I have been watching too many police shows.
It is a staple of your television show to do exactly as you just mentioned.
Sipowicz could have done it.
Andy Sipowicz could have done it. I saw him do it many
yes,
times.
With his short sleeve shirts
yep.
and ties that he always wore.
Yep.
Somebody just texted 773, and feel free to call us 312-981-7200. When the police officer's life is in danger, do you really think aiming for the knees is a wise choice in a split second? Wake up. I want to mention that if you've seen the video, first of all, this officer in question has a partner who drove up, I believe, and he got out of the passenger
side. You're talking about Van Dyke's partner?
Yes.
Yeah, he does.
So he wasn't alone. Plus, there are how many squad cars and paddy wagons and other police presence at that scene? A lot.
Yeah.
So I don't feel that it looked like his life was in danger. I understand, and listen, I respect what those police officers do every single day. They do a job protecting us so we can go home and have dinner with our family, and that's what they want to do every night, too.
Do me a favor, then. Talk to Dave, because Dave has a very similar point, and he's been on hold for a long time.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. I was just calling. I do respect the right for protest, and the thing on the other side of that, though, is that the officers, the majority of them, are still doing their job.
Absolutely.
Nobody really has brought up that they caught suspects or made arrests in regards to the 9-year-old that was murdered. Other cases are continually being worked on. You know, it's a tragedy of certain circumstances, and it's, but you still have to respect that they are being patient. I mean, a week ago, they had a person at a protest and went eyeball to eyeball with one of the officers, and he became a media, you know, picture of.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that actually, Ryan Burrow was covering the protest yesterday and said that that gentleman who went eye to eye with the cop was at the protest yesterday. And that doesn't seem right to me, to threaten them, you know, with a looking glance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't a glance. I mean, I would call it a stare.
It was, yeah, a stare down. He was, yeah.
Now, the thing with that, it's on Facebook about that specific person you're talking about, is that they're saying on Facebook he's a professional protester being paid to show up at all these things to, you know, still be able to protest, but to, you know, get right in people's faces. I mean, people have a right to protest, but, you know, there is a thing about space.
Who pays a professional protester? Where does that money come from?
I don't. I'm just saying it's on the internet, which. Oh. Believe or not believe. But
maybe he
just saying everybody has a right to protest, but you know, there is a point where it's they're still doing their jobs.
Sure, of course.
And thank you to all the police officers that get out there and work on those cases of that poor 9-year-old who was shot dead, and they have solved it. I felt bad when McCarthy was let go.
I did too. I still do.
I do too.
Because it's not any, now that he's out of office, the problem has not been solved, has it? Is everything good now that he's out of office?
I don't think so.
No,
and just to listen to Rahm say we need to look at things with some fresh eyes and we need to solve this problem, I think, you know, Police Superintendent McCarthy has been here and knows what to do. I think sometimes his hands were tied in some of it.
Yeah, without a doubt. Wouldn't you agree?
How much national news is there? There's bits here and there about officers that have lost their lives or injured in the line of duty. We've lost the most officers now this time of year in probably 5-10 years.
It's a tough time to be a cop, and you know what? I abide by the law, and when a police officer questions me, I show them.
And that happens a lot lately, be honest.
I show them respect.
Dave, thanks. We appreciate the phone call. Wouldn't you say if you look at any job, just you pick the job, the guy who works at the Gap selling you shirts, this job, no matter what the job is, there's some people who do it really well and by the book, and there's some people who cut corners and make some mistakes. Unfortunately, with police officers, their mistakes, as we have found out, can be very, very deadly. That's not the case with most jobs. But it's the same kind of curve as any job. There's some people who do everything the right way, and there's some people who don't do everything the right way.
And I don't think you're implying that this Officer Van Dyke made a mistake.
I'm not implying he made a mistake.
I just wanted to clarify
No, he did not.
Hi, Jim.
How you doing, guys? How you doing today?
Great, Jim. What's up?
Good, good, good. I just called to comment in regards to aiming for a hand or a leg as opposed to aiming for a torso.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, I just got my carry and conceal license, and the state of Illinois, we had to go through some training, and they said don't ever aim for a hand or a leg because it's the worst part of the body to try to hit, especially in a situation that you're not sure of. You aim for the torso, and you might get a ricochet and hit an innocent bystander if you're aiming for a limb.
That makes a lot of sense, and from a distance, yeah, I guess you go for the torso because it's a bigger target.
It's a bigger target, and it's easier to hit, and there's less chance of being ricocheted or hitting an innocent bystander.
Do you go for the head on your first shot, typically?
Well, no. They say two to the chest and one to the head is the unwritten rule.
So two to the chest, and if no slowdown appears, then...
Yes.
Carte blanche to go to the head.
And who gives you that advice? Is it a gun instructor who's telling you this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah? All right.
Yes. Yes, from the state of Illinois. Yes.
Okay.
That's interesting. And, you know, I'm sorry. I don't own a gun. I never will. I think it's cool if people want to have guns. I don't care about that. But I don't know about this. So thank you for clearing that up, Jim. And
wait, can I ask Jim one quick question? Jim, are you required now when you get a license to have a gun in the state? Are you required to have some sort of a session or sessions with a gun instructor, or is that optional?
A FOID card, you do not. But if you want a carry and conceal card, you have to go through training in the state of Illinois in order to get a carry and conceal card.
All right. I wasn't sure how that worked.
And do people slip through the cracks and not get that training?
Well, yes. Yes. Well, it's hard to get the card without the training. I'm sure, you know, I'm not sure about that, but I would think that you probably could bypass something and try to get that, but law-abiding citizens will go through the training in order to get that card.
Well, I appreciate the information because obviously I've never shot a gun and never will, and I didn't know that. Yeah, it makes sense. The torso is a bigger target than a limb,
right,
especially at a distance.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jim. We learn something every day, and thanks to you listeners, we're going to keep learning because here's something that I think we questioned. Bill, you threw that out and said, who pays a protester?
How can you be a professional protester? You're not going to make any money doing that, right? Who pays you?
Katie, what do you think about that?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I live in Rockford, Illinois, and I was volunteering at the Democratic headquarters for Obama. And three busloads of paid protesters were brought down from the Republican Party in Rockford from Milwaukee. And they were the rudest, crudest, most ignorant people. They were blocking people from coming in to get yard signs.
Yeah.
Now, by law, they can go and stand on the sidewalk and protest all they want. But they were coming up, rubbing, pushing their faces and noses into the glass like a little kid does. And just being rude and with these nasty, nasty signs of abortion, which are not true.
But politically, I can see where a political candidate would pay someone to go get their message across. But someone,
so it's a candidate?
People were not coming down because they believed in it. They were a bunch of losers that were being paid just for that. They go around people that are unemployed and that. And then when it was all done, this is how dumb they are. There was a big bank right across the street, and they come in and say, can you tell me where I can get my check cashed?
Oh.
I mean, and I oh, really? Well, you got paid for this? Well, you don't think we do it for nothing, do you? Oh, yeah. They were so rude and so crude. They blocked people. They blocked people from coming in and out. They harassed them. I mean, you know, if you stay out, like I say, on the police finally had to come and get them and move them away because they were being so destructive. But you cannot come up and push your face into the glass and do stuff like that and write nasty things on the glass with markers and stuff. That, you know, that's going too far.
It's too
and
deep.
That man, black man, who stood and stared in that police officer's face, to me, should have been arrested.
Well, he didn't do anything. He showed disrespect.
It's
but
not
he
illegal
did, yeah.
to stare at somebody.
Katie, thank you so much for your call. We have to take a break, and we have people who want to jump in on this.
Okay, please do. 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
But you should even read it more slowly, because listening about the Anderson candy.
Makes your mouth water a little bit, doesn't it? Just a bit, yeah.
We have so many callers, Bill. I don't know how we're going to get to each and every one of them.
Do it alphabetically.
All right. Well, then we'll start with Arlene. hi, Arlene. We were talking earlier about officers. I asked why they can't just shoot for an extremity, you know, shoot for a leg, shoot for an arm, just something to take them down. Someone called in and said, you go for the torso because it's a bigger target, and mm-hmm. you have some other information, don't you?
It's real similar to what that guy said. I used to teach, and one of the classes I taught was kind of a mini mock trial, and I would invite a police officer, I taught in the suburbs, to come in and talk to the kids. And he said, imagine that, you know, you're the police officer. You come upon a scene, you've got the perpetrator running away, so the arms and legs are pumping. You're running after the person, chasing somebody with the gun out. You're trying to, you know, shoot somebody. He said, it's not practical. He said, you know, you do shoot for the torso. He said, unfortunately, that's like the largest target. And even when you see people going to, you know, shooting ranges, you shoot for the torso because it's the largest target. And, well, what the guy said about getting his FOID card kind of fits into that, because if you're trying to shoot while somebody's running down an alley, you know, you hit the pavement, guns, you know, bullets ricochet or something like that. So that's what the police officer told the kids when I was teaching.
But Arlene, I wonder if the training is different for a police officer than it is for a civilian, because your situation of using a gun are going to be pretty different, aren't they, under those circumstances?
I would certainly think so. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying that this is what the officers say. You know, we see, you know, I'm old enough to know, you know, remember watching the old Western movies when you'd see the guys on their horseback, you know, chasing after the rustlers or whatever, and, you know, they somehow shoot the gun out of the guy's hand while they're on a horseback.
Right.
And yeah. You know, and I think we kind of think that's how it works. And the reality of the situation is it's not. And even for the police officers, you know, they would say their hearts are pumping too. You know, they don't intend to shoot somebody. That's not their plan. But they may have to. You know, I think statistically, it used to be that when you ask how many times a police officer in his career would shoot his gun, the answer is none. You know, they just, in the line of duty, they just don't. You know, most officers never fire their gun.
That is very interesting and informative. Arlene, thank you so much.
Thanks, Arlene.
And Wendy, I'm going to be watching Cornerstones of Rock tonight. I was there.
Cornerstones of Rock, I'll tell you about it later, but yes, WTTW, the premiere tonight. It's pledge night, 7:30, be there or be square.
All right.
I'll be watching.
Thanks, Arlene.
Thanks, Arlene. In alphabetical order, we now go to Brian. You make life very easy.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're good. You're an officer. You have worked some protests. What did you want to add to this conversation?
You know, well, I've been listening to you guys for weeks. I listen all the time at 7:20, 7:80, all the AM info and my sports stuff.
Thanks, Brian. You sound disgusted that you do, though.
Yeah. But it gets hard to listen to some of the people are calling, and a lot of them are right on point. As far as the shooting, plain and simple, officers are trained to shoot center mass. You don't shoot guns and ice out of anyone's hands. You shoot from basically, you know, upper chest, let's say clavicle, down to the belly button. And you're trained to eliminate the threat.
You want to stop them. You don't want it to be convenient. You want to stop whatever's going on. You want to put a stop to it.
You have to end it. If there's yourself or citizens in line of fire, well, not in line of fire, but in any type of danger, you have to eliminate the threat. That's all. So you don't shoot at hands or feet, legs, anything like that.
But, Brian, can I ask real quick? It seemed, and I'm sure by this point you've seen the video of Laquan McDonald, it seemed at some point that the shots could have stopped, that 16 shots seemed a little excessive. At the end of two or three or maybe even four shots, he was done.
Completely agree. And yeah. I think if everyone could simply turn the finger sometimes back themselves instead of constantly pointing it, I think we'd all be a lot better. And I'm going to point the finger at myself here or as a police officer, where that, my opinion, was way extreme.
It was, yeah.
The first two or three, because they had a knife, we were taught on that. I forget what it was. I got a little bit of time on 21, 20 feet rule with a knife. It's, by the time we basically decided the threat, he has a weapon, and we go to draw, we're already stabbed within 21 feet. They've shown that. They've trained us on that. So the first couple shots, I don't have a problem with. Once he goes down with a knife, I'm done. I'm not shooting anymore. A gun, that's a whole different story. Because
right, absolutely.
From 4 to 8 pounds of pressure to pull the trigger. You can do a hand and you can pull the trigger. and shoot many people.
Brian, here's my question. When you get out of the car and you're with a partner and there are that many other police officers and squad cars on the scene, do you get out while shooting, which is what seemed to happen, or do you get out and kind of evaluate the situation? Because watching that video, and I know there's no sound and there shouldn't be sound because I don't know that I want to hear any of it, but it almost seems, in my opinion, that some of the cops had looked at Officer Van Dyke and said, what? Like, they seemed shocked that it's like he got out of the car shooting, it seemed.
I think every single police officer on a scene like that has a different angle and a different view. Whatever Van Dyke saw, we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, he'll get to explain that in court. The other officers, maybe they didn't feel threatened. Maybe they didn't feel he was a threat to anyone else or to any other police officers on scene. Van Dyke might have saw a slight movement. You know, I mean, I'm not going to justify anything for him.
No, but you're right. You can't speak for him, and he will have a chance to say what it was that prompted his shots.
Right. And, if I was in the same position and I saw the slightest movement towards me or another officer, I would fire.
Brian, I wish we could talk to you longer. We're out of time, but just very, very quickly, do you or other police officers you know handle themselves a little bit differently knowing that there is more camera coverage?
I think the breed of the new police officer, I'll say, let's say over the last 10, 15 years, with Chicago being probably one of the leading cities in camera and all that technology, especially with law enforcement technology, are trained up. You just have to be, I don't know if I want to say more professionally, you just got to do, and you're taught the right thing. You know, it's just like everyone's saying how, oh, they planted the gun. There's no gun plant. That's ridiculous. You want to talk about 40 years ago? Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe. Nowadays, you have a lot of college-educated policemen, and it's just, you don't have these rural coppers anymore. I'm not buying into that one bit.
Yeah.
But there are exceptions to the rule. And, you know, you look at Officer Glinowitz. Was it Fox Lake? I mean, there are bad cops. Like, there are bad radio personalities. Like, there are bad teachers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Every profession. Yeah.
But, Brian, I can't thank you enough from the bottom of my heart for getting out there, all the police officers getting out there protecting our lives every day. It's a really noble job, and I thank you so much for that.
No, absolutely. Real quick, I tell you, some of these protesters, there's some that are decent, and the majority of them, like that one kid, that kid likes to stare, and yeah, he's a kid.
Yeah.
And it's rumor, but I've heard he's been paid, and he supposedly lives in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Really?
To come out here and just be an instigator. And then, a lot of these kids, you should hear the stuff they say. It's utterly ridiculous.
Brian, thanks. Appreciate the call.
Stay safe.
Hope you have a good holiday.
Right.
Take care.
Take care, guys.
All right. Let's do a quick break. Steve has the news. We'll chat with Louis Anderson in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Wow!
Wendy, you know who's here? You know how every once in a while we'll say, things are going good, but they'd be even better if Louis Anderson were here. Louis Anderson's here.
What's up, dog?
Hi, Louis. How are you? Appearing at the Chicago Improv in Schaumburg tonight through Sunday. It says
on
the sheet. Yeah.
Were you the inspiration for the Kingsmen singing that song?
I hope not. It's the worst song.
Oh, I love it.
But when you have the name of somebody in a song, somebody will come up to you and just start singing your name.
They'll play it every time I do a radio show. Oh, did you play it?
No, we did not.
I didn't think
what song
No, we played Wendy by the Beach Boys.
So you know.
Yeah.
And Billy, Don't Be a Hero, just to make it worse.
Yeah, yeah. I like it.
What song from here on in when we have you as a guest, song would you like them to play?
I'm almost, hello.
You want Adele?
No, I just thought, I'm just trying to be current. I like to be relevant.
This will bring the kids in.
It's hard to be current with music sometimes, though, isn't it? If it wasn't for SNL, I wouldn't know who some of these new people were.
I wouldn't either. I met many of the bands and music I like from life.
Yeah.
When you get older, all the words aren't available. available. Oh, don't you need to get that in a spelling bee? Ooh. From doing shows and stuff.
Sure,
of course. Oh, they're good. Like people will say to me, I just downloaded this new song, and I'll think, oh. Who has time for that?
I know. It takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
Have you opened for some of the bands that you idolized?
Let's see. Well, yeah, not idolized, but yeah, some of the R&B, like the Four Tops.
Oh, nice.
The Temptations. Natalie Cole.
Awesome.
One of my Midnight Train. What's her name? Gladys Knight.
Gladys Knight.
No,
sure.
Pips.
Pip no, the free. Pips were there. No, oh, okay. I think the Pips yeah. were there. At least one Pip was there.
You got to have one Pip, don't
there
you, Louie? They
pip
always
or
say
two Pips. And Smokey Robinson, oh. Pointer Sisters. I opened for everybody. I really was lucky. Ray Charles. Oh. So I opened for a lot of wonderful people that I got to sit back and go, oh, my God, I'm so lucky.
Isn't that nice yeah. to work with those people?
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a did you great have to wear job. The matching outfits when you did the four
only
tops?
Only with the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, the Pointer
yes,
Sisters.
Yes, they made you wear them.
And they used to make them send three limos for them.
Is that right? They each got a limo?
Things. Yeah, I don't think they were family.
Getting along? Oh, no.
No, they were. I mean, but I think they all got their own limo.
Yeah. What if it was
why do we need one? We should get three. I
everyone should have their own limo.
Yeah.
Would a show work if it was just the Pips? If Gladys Knight said, I'm done with show business, Pips, you're yes. on your own. Would that have been a good
show? At Sullivan's on 7th, that would work. Pips. Tonight, the Pips.
Who? Just the Pips.
Who are these guys?
Can I ask you, did a show. There was a time on television where there were no shows at all where celebrities would dive into swimming pools, and then they decided we should have shows.
I think
with
so.
Celebrities that dive into swimming pools.
Yeah.
What was that like when you got a call that said, Louie, we want you to be on our show with celebrities diving into swimming pools?
Here's how it happened. My manager was visiting to see if I was, alive, I guess.
Yeah.
And, they'd show up occasionally, sign these things. What? And he said, I want you to watch this video. And he showed me the origin of the show, which was Danish,
mm-hmm.
which was a Netherlands show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the show. And they happened to have a big guy like me on it,
mm-hmm.
who I think might have won it there. But that was the guy, that's where it was invented.
Yeah.
And they said, ABC's doing it, and they want you to do it. And I said, I'll do it. Because I was sitting on the couch.
Oh.
And I thought, well, I could get off the couch. And I only learned how to swim when I was 55.
Seriously?
Yeah. A woman who used to swim in the place where I lived, there was a pool, indoor pool. So I would go and work out in the water. And I didn't know how to swim, but she would swim an hour every day or 3 days a week. And she was 76. And so I said, well, she can swim. So I watched her and I learned how to swim.
Can I
Ava,
ask you,
Ava?
I've always wondered this, Louie. My mom went her whole life without knowing how to swim.
Yeah,
and my mom too.
Yours is the same. You didn't learn until you were 55 years
yeah.
old. Once you learned how to swim, didn't you say to yourself, I could have been swimming my whole life. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not that fun, really, either. I like laying on a raft or doing handstands.
I agree with you. I think I would have not turned into as fat a kid as I was. I think I would have had a place to do exercise
yeah, right.
that I enjoyed because I can swim for an hour. I can swim laps for an hour.
Yeah.
Really?
So that's the exercise I get, thank God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And easy I'm weightless. On your joints?
I'm weightless yes. in the water.
So what was it as a kid when other kids were learning to swim? Were you just, were you,
no,
you
my
afraid
mom
of the water?
Didn't want us by the, she said, I don't want you to drown.
That was too dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a kid drowned in a lake by us and then that was it.
Yeah.
And also, being a fat kid, you never wanted to take your shirt off.
Oh, yeah.
So I would always swim with a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Well, look, and that became popular because those rash guard shirts that,
yeah.
you know, people.
Well, mine was just pennies.
Oh.
So
that still counts. That's still a shirt.
And it wasn't quick dry, I'm sure.
No, it wasn't. It was. And believe it or not, it got bigger after I swam in it.
Stretches out.
Yeah.
Louie Anderson's here. He's appearing at the Improv, the Chicago Improv, tonight through Sunday, doing stand-up. No diving at all in this show.
Well, you never know.
There might be some diving.
I might dive into the front if things aren't going well.
Some crowd diving?
Yeah, why not?
People love crowd diving.
It would shock people,
wouldn't it? All right.
There's a mosh pit here?
Yeah, when did that happen?
Yeah. I don't know.
All right, a quick break, and then more with our friend Louie Anderson. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Louie Anderson. There's your new theme song.
It's me.
Do you have any pizza? Anything hot in the oven? Could I get some to eat? Hello? Could you bring me up some pie.
A baked goods, back to the bakeries.
You close with that song, you can't miss. That's a guaranteed winner at the end there. Louis Anderson.
Never listen to anybody when they tell you something like that.
Especially Bill.
You know that, Bill. You know that. It's a kiss of death.
No, it's all advice.
And then he does that hello song. And I said, let's get out of here.
The whole show
was
that
all about?
And then
up till then, oh.
Appearing at the Chicago Improv tonight. That's in Schaumburg. Tonight through Sunday, chicago.improv.com. Or your own website, louisanderson.com, will also work.
That would be nice.
I know you just put in a decade of service there in Las Vegas. Are you going to keep doing Las Vegas, or are you
done? I'm done with the daily, you know, like the resident show.
Yeah?
Not doing that again. Not there.
How come? What happened?
I just, 10 years.
Yeah? It's a long time.
It 10 years. And now, you know, it's all changed. Everything's changed. You know, the whole...
Las Vegas has?
Yeah, there's 25 comedy clubs.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm all for it, you know?
Yeah.
And I have my fans. I'm not worried about that. I just said, I'm done with that. You know, you get to a certain point in your life and you go, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I had a wonderful time, and now I'm doing a few clubs is all I do.
That's it.
And this is one of them, because I love
choice.
It here, and I'm friends with the owner.
With Tony?
Mm-hmm. Tony's a great guy. And
Tony B. and his niece, Stephanie. Do you know Stephanie?
I don't know Stephanie.
She is your niece, isn't she, Tony?
Sometimes,
yes.
And she's doing a good job over there. So, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a really fun, it's a family type. You feel...
I brought my family to see you last time.
Yeah,
did
you?
Yeah.
Was it fun?
Yeah, we had a great time.
Well, I'm good at stand-up.
You are good at stand-up.
If I had to do something else, like if somebody said, Louie, we're going to redo the living room in the place there. Can you help us out?
Yeah.
No.
No, nothing.
I could. I can hold the door while you bring this stuff in.
That's something.
Right? That's a good thing.
Can I pay you a huge compliment? Back when I did stand up, I was working in Omaha, Nebraska one week, and I didn't know any of the comics, but they invited me on a Saturday to come to their house, and then we were all going to play softball. Before we played softball, now keep in mind, at the time, Andrew Dice Clay was the hottest stand-up comic there was, and all those guys idolized him, but I did not.
Yeah.
Your special was on HBO. One of your specials was on HBO, and five of us sat and watched it. And they loved it. They loved every minute of it. I had already seen it, but I watched it again. And when it was over, I said, that's what stand-up comedy is. I know you guys think that Andrew Dice Clay, because he was the flavor of the day at the time, is stand-up comedy. But that's what stand-up comedy is. Louis Anderson does it right.
That's so sweet of you. Well, it's one of the gifts that I was given, so.
Yeah.
It was really, it's really a great, you can't explain it. You do it because you're sick with it.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm still working, because I don't know what I would do. I would get fatter. I would get fatter. I'm just being honest. Like, at least
you're
I'm going
swimming
out.
Now.
I'm swimming. I'd be swimming in pudding then. If I wasn't. Huh? I hear there's more resistance.
Isn't that what heaven will be like, though? Yes. You can swim in pudding in heaven.
I'm hoping that I'll be much thinner. I'm hoping that God would be smart enough to go, hey, you did good. You're in heaven. Look how thin you are. Thank you, Lord. Lord, thank you.
Yeah, but you can get what you want to eat all the time in heaven. That's what I think
about.
Yes, but
I want to be thin. I don't want to be the fat guy in heaven. Hey, there's Louie. Hey, stay off my cloud. Stop laying on my cloud, Louie. Stay out of my fridge. You got your own.
Can you remember when you were a kid and you figured out the formula of me say stuff, people laugh at stuff, everything's good? Can you remember that?
Yeah. So bullies wouldn't pick on me. I would write jokes for them.
Really?
About
the
kids they were with. Yeah. And they would, I would do it under my breath. You know, his mom's ugly, isn't she? And then the kid would go, hey, your mom's ugly. And he'd get a laugh and he'd go, thank you. Then he would not punch both arms.
Just limit it to the one arm?
I never did a mom's ugly thing, though, because that's not the kind of person I was. But
can I also take a guess at something? I want to take a quick guess.
Shouldn't you be on a show on Sunday night on the, you know, like on the... what would be the thing, like the Explore Network?
Yes.
Here we are. Can I ask you a question? You're up here in Alaska. You're freezing to death. Why? Move south. Just get out of here.
I would take that show. I'd be on that show.
You'd be great on that
show. I'm going to guess that there's some influence from Jonathan Winters into
Big,
you.
Yeah.
There has to be.
Yeah. All the character stuff. Is definitely. I used to watch his show where he'd go up in the attic and put all the hats and stuff on.
Hysterical.
He was Jonathan Winters, Johnny Carson, Bob Hope, Richard Pryor, Jackie Vernon.
All the greats.
Those were Jack Benny. Time.
Yeah.
Those are Jack Benny for my pauses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the looks, God, I loved.
Yeah, the looks too.
Jack you could Benny. Do more
the
with
looks are my mom's.
Oh, really?
Mm. Oh, moms have that look because I'm a mom. I have that look now. I never had it when I was younger.
Yeah, you don't have it until you're a mom.
I don't want it.
You have
to give it back.
You can't give it back. What would you do? Your kids would go, "We don't know what she means." Mom, is it good? Moms have control. They can control you from 300 yards. Nobody can see this.
Yeah, but they know the mom face. They've seen it.
Yeah, everybody has. Everybody's been disapproved by their mom.
Right, right.
Even Bush is sitting there, and Barbara comes in. Oh, George. Started that war, didn't you? You nut, huh? You always wanted trouble, George. Why don't you be like Jeb? He's a zoom. Don't you think Barbara Bush? She
always.
Me and my
absolutely.
Mom.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Barbara Bush scolded me once. So
she did?
She did. I Seems was out doing of place. A show. I did a show welcoming home the troops from the first Desert Storm.
Yeah.
They had a big gala on TV.
Yeah.
Andy Griffith was on it. John Boy Walton.
Richard,
singers.
Yeah.
Richard Thomas.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or Moleface, as some people call
him. Oh, nice. Moleface! I wrote that.
It was a birthmark.
Bully. I wrote that for the bully. Just call him Moley.
I guess I was a bully.
Hey, Moley? Yes, you were a bully, I guess. Yep. Everyone knows it's a bully.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm on there, and it was really fascinating, and it was welcoming home the troops.
Yeah.
So I was going to do some time. I was approved, and I go up. I started. I walked up to the microphone, and I go, first of all, I'd like to welcome home all the Vietnam vets.
Nice.
Which was not on the script.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
And when Barbara came up with George, she did this look.
Yep. I'm disappointed in you, that
Didn't
look.
Didn't shake my hand.
Really?
Oh.
It was okay, though, because vets still come up to me saying that they appreciate
it. That meant
that.
A lot to them. Absolutely. You know, go see Louis Anderson, everybody. You need
it.
To see
come
Louis.
Tonight.
He doesn't do
I'm
a lot of these
tonight,
club dates. Tonight he's funny.
I'm funny tonight.
He closes
Tomorrow,
with the Adele song.
A little less funny, but funny. Right? Saturday, always
That's
you know,
a killer
funny.
Night.
We'll be sold. You probably can't even get a ticket
nope.
for that.
Nope.
Sunday, the funniest night.
That's a good night, too.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm done.
Yep. Well,
I'm going, this is going to be easy because I'm done.
Go see Louie. Chicago Improv in Schaumburg.
I will give you so many disapproving looks.
You will do that to
I'm
the
I'm
going
to do a whole thing on my mom because the cranberries, the Thanksgiving, the whole thing.
Yep. It's all there.
The sweet mom. Potatoes.
Yeah.
Yep. It'll all
Somebody
be there.
The sweet potatoes. Get them. They're on the bottom shelf. Mom, we're eating dessert.
Yep.
Put some on the side of your plate. That's what
that happens
say.
Every year.
I love
Chicago
you guys.
ChicagoImprov.com. That's
love
where
you.
Louis Anderson is. Thank you, Louis. Have a great
Thank
holiday.
You so much. He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then need your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. You want to talk about hard points, Dean.
Dino.
Hey, Dean Richards.
Hey, Richards. Great to be here on All Things Considered.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you. We appreciate that. Dean, we're 1 week away. We're 1 week away from the opening of Star Wars, which is not just a movie at this point; it's a cultural event.
Right?
Is the world ready for it?
Let me check.
All right,
I'll go around and ask people.
Ask the world.
Yeah, the world's ready for it. Are you kidding me? There, people are going crazy for this. Do you know people are already camped out in front of the famous Chinese theater? In Hollywood, they've been camped out for several days now. The movie doesn't open until a week from tomorrow. And they're just, you know, they're sleeping in their tents and they're sitting out.
They're pitching a tent, that's for sure.
Well, they're going to be pitching a tent when they finally get into that theater. And whoever gets to sit next to that aromatic bunch is going to be quite the treat.
You didn't see it yet, did you?
I have not seen it yet.
I am seeing it Thursday night. Hollywood Boulevard in Woodridge. My husband Jimmy Mack and Jason Swank, his partner, are doing a live podcast and Rebel Force Radio. You can find it on WGNplus.com.
Yeah.
I will have my review of Star Wars Thursday morning.
Really?
Instantaneous. That's how Dean is.
Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
Fresh as the day's
Thursday
headlines.
Thursday night. Wow.
I'm seeing it. The critics are seeing it a little bit before that. This is so interesting that there's so much secrecy behind this movie. They haven't even told us where we're going yet. They're going to, like, send, you know, this is like
the Death Star is going to come pick you up.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dean, did you see the comments? You know, there was a time where Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas were very close. They came up in kind of the same school of young filmmakers.
Weren't they married for a little while?
They were married for a couple of years. They have a daughter, a lovely daughter.
Right.
So Francis Ford Coppola said how unfortunate it is that George Lucas has gotten swept up in all this Star Wars stuff, that there was a time where he was a young, innovative filmmaker. He would take chances. He would do small movies. And those days are gone, and he wishes he would go back to that. What do you make of those comments?
Well, I don't know that he's gotten so swept up in it. I mean, I guess you could say that he sold out, if anything. I mean, if you want to insult George Lucas in some way,
yeah,
he did sell it to the Disney Corporation. But, you know, in a way, I think that that's healthy, that they are going to ensure that this franchise lives on. I haven't seen anything yet that, you know, tells me that they're cheapening the franchise or making the franchise worse or less. You know, generally Disney stuff is pretty solid. I mean,
You've seen the trailers. I mean, it
looks phenomenal.
Really looks phenomenal.
I'm super excited. You know, I'm a fan. So you know, I'm not sure exactly how biased unbiased I'm going to be about it, but I'm very much looking forward to it. I haven't gotten the sense yet that I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty exciting.
Now,
and how interesting also that the director of the film, J.J. Abrams, has decided to not enter his film in most of the awards considerations that are taking place because he wants to keep it secret. I mean, nobody is seeing this movie until early next week. I mean, the critics and, you know, we see it Tuesday. The earliest screenings for the public are Thursday. But, you know, normally by this time, movie studios would have sent out copies of the movies that they want for awards consideration. Like all, you know, the Screen Actors Guild nominations came out yesterday. The Golden Globe nominations came out this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those films are not released yet, but the movie studios sent the people who, the voters in those organizations, of which I am a member of several of them, they send us the DVDs of the movies so we can watch them to make our votes. J.J. Abrams said, I don't care if I get nominations. I don't want to jeopardize the secrecy and the integrity of my movie just so I can get a Golden Globe.
Good for him.
So he doesn't care about that, which I think is, I think it's kind of cool. And I like J.J. Abrams' films. I like what he's done with both of the Star Trek films. I like what he's done with other films. I'm a fan of J.J. Abrams. So I think the Star Wars franchise is in good hands.
And you can enjoy the J.J. Abrams tribute to the Beastie Boys in the new Star Wars action figure.
How's that?
What does that mean?
The Force Awakens character is an ode to the Beastie Boys, L.O. Asty. Hello, Nasty. It's a pilot born to ill. He was a big Beastie Boys fan, and of course, being married to someone who collects all the action figures, this arrived. L.O. Asty arrived at our house, part of the collection of Jimmy Max, and it's an ode and homage to one of the Beastie Boys.
You are one lucky woman.
It's about
you know
time.
What? I know.
Yeah. You're one lucky woman to have so many cool things in your house.
You're welcome to come over.
It got real quiet.
Wendy,
did you notice it got so quiet?
I'd like to sleep over, if that's all right.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got a couple of big films opening up.
Dean, stay at your house.
Dean will share those with us in just a few minutes. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Dean, did I see something about you hosting a little panel and some students who saw Chirac?
Yes.
I have Amazon Prime, and I was going to watch it, and a lot of people...
It's on Amazon Prime?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
And a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, I don't know that I want to watch it.
You definitely want to watch it.
I just want to see. I want to see what all the buzz is about.
You definitely want to watch it, because this is what we did this week. You know, I was pretty much up to my eyeballs in reviews on Chirac, and at one point realized that most of the reviews, including my own, about this have come from old white guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we think we're brilliant. We you know, we sit and pontificate on the movies every week.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is a different kind of movie. This was supposed to be a movie which should have been, to me, I think, a powerful social statement. I think missed the boat, missed opportunity was the quote that I used on this. But I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to hear what people who actually live in Chatham think about this movie? What people in Inglewood really think of this movie? People who are most affected by gun violence in real life, not, you know, the old white guys live in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So we put together, with the help of rapper Rhymefest, who's very involved in the community. He works with Donda's House, which is an organization actually founded by Kanye West, for students who are interested in film and art and, you know, the fine arts and so forth. We set up a screening for them to go and see it, and then we invited them to come on the TV morning show, and we sat them down in a panel, and everyone gave their opinions about the movie. Surprisingly, all but one of the people that we had on did not like the movie, were very disappointed in the movie, and were so articulate and so passionate and so well-spoken about why they felt the way they felt about this movie, how Spike Lee sold them out, sold out the using gun violence in Chicago for his own profit. One of the young men that we spoke to, these are all, you know, like maybe 19 to 22-year-old, you know, young people. One of the young men lost a brother to gun violence, was very good friends with somebody else who was killed as a result of gun violence, you know, and he said, this isn't funny. You know, the use of satire with this is not a funny subject.
Yeah.
And when you hear that from somebody who has personally experienced death, you know, maybe you take it a little more seriously than Spike Lee sitting and yelling at people and pontificating himself about how, you know, we don't understand the message that he's making because it's satire. Here are people who are affected by the gun violence who are saying it's not funny. But you have to hear these young people, women on the panel, who were offended at the sexualization of this movie. That, you know, this is not a story about making women sex objects. That, you know, they're going to get hold a sex strike in order to stop the violence. They felt uncomfortable and they felt insulted by it. So again, white guy pontificating about what, you know, these young people were saying. It's on. I didn't know that it was on Amazon, but it's on YouTube. You can easily find it on the web. It's on our WGN TV website. I think it was 10, 11 really thoughtful, moving opinions about this movie that are worth hearing. And I, above all, I hope Spike Lee hears them and listens and thinks about this the next time that he tries to do something like this.
Spike Lee's Chirac on Amazon's first original movie. That's what it says. So I don't. Now that I said that, I don't know that it is Prime, and I was planning on getting it.
Oh.
I don't know what that means.
We'll find it.
Yeah, because if it's on Prime, I'm going to need some royalties for that.
Yes, you are. You deserve some royalties.
Spike Lee's not the only one that can cash in on the community.
Dean, there's this. No, he's not. There's this actor, Eddie Redmayne, whose name was probably unfamiliar to many of us a couple of years ago, but he's had a couple of really strong years. Last year, he won the Academy Award for Theory of Everything.
Yep.
Now he's in a movie called The Danish Girl, and people are saying he may be a repeat winner for this. What do you think?
I agree. I think it's one of the strongest performances that I've seen this year. He was nominated for a Golden Globe this morning and a Screen Actors Guild Award as well. He plays... one of the very first people in the world to undergo gender reassignment surgery. This is back in, like, the 1920s. you know, before people even understood what transgenderism was or gender, you know, gender identity really was. I mean, this was really a foreign field. It was treated as a mental illness. Yeah.
And who were the doctors that did that back then? That shocks me.
Right. As when I met, when we first started talking about this movie, months and months ago, Steve Cochran asked me, where'd they do this, at a blacksmith?
Right. That's who did it back then, blacksmith.
It was painful.
Yep.
It wasn't a sterile situation like it might be now when you go through something like that.
No.
But this is one of the most sensitive, touching, beautiful movies that I've ever seen. It's about a guy who is married to a very beautiful woman who just knows that he just doesn't feel comfortable in his own skin. He's married. The actress in this movie is Alicia Vikander.
Yeah.
She was also nominated for a Golden Globe today. Both of these are such touching, beautiful performances. It's only going to be in a few theaters when it opens tomorrow, but this is without a doubt one of the best movies of the year. I'm giving this Dean's List A. Fantastic.
It's that good.
Fantastic film.
One of the most touching you've ever seen, you said. That
this
says
year,
a lot.
This year, for sure.
Oh, for the year. Yeah. And we don't have time to go into great detail, but I know there's this other movie, In the Heart of the Sea, opening up today that's gotten some interesting reviews.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts?
In the Heart of the Sea, it's about a skipper and his little buddy. They go out for a three-hour tour with a millionaire, his wife.
A movie star?
Professor, movie star.
Yeah.
Yep. And
Marianne?
And the rest.
Yes.
Wow.
And apparently they're eaten by a whale.
Oh, no.
During the voyage. It's a director Ron Howard's story of the story that inspired Moby Dick. A little bit disappointing on this, to tell you the truth. It certainly is action filled, but it just really falls kind of flat. Visually, it's certainly overwhelming, but not really to much point. Wound up giving this one a Dean's List C. I was honestly a little disappointed because I'm a big Ron Howard fan.
Yeah, of course. Dean, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Have a great week.
You too, guys.
Thanks. Dean Richards, everybody. We'll find out what Steve has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effen and it's Wendy Snyder. Thrilled that you're listening for part two. We have all kinds of guests, a myriad of topics, and it should be good. I saw this, and I wanted to bring this up to you, and I forgot, so let's do it now. There's some food item from the 1990s that is no longer available, and I don't even know if you're aware of this. I think you are. I think most people are aware of this food item. It existed for years and years and years. They stopped making it, but now, for 2 days, you can get this food item again. Do you know what I'm referring to?
You may have stumped the panel.
Crystal Pepsi. Do you remember Crystal Pepsi?
It was clear.
It was clear Pepsi that they made for a while. People loved it. And I don't understand why, because it's just Pepsi without the caramel color.
So does it taste like an Uncola?
No, it doesn't taste like lime. No, it tastes like Pepsi.
You tried it?
Yeah, it was, for a while, it was everywhere. And then all of a sudden, they just stopped making it.
I got to tell you, I never noticed it.
You don't remember it? You don't remember it at all?
I don't really drink Pepsi products.
But not, even in stores or in ads, you never came across Crystal Pepsi?
No, I've heard of crystal meth.
Totally different thing.
Okay.
Totally different thing. It disappeared from the shelves in 1993. It has not been back since. Many, many people have written to the Pepsi Corporation begging and pleading, it says, saying, bring back our Crystal Pepsi. It's not the same.
It's the new Coke thing.
Well, I guess to some extent, all I remember is like I only drank it a handful of times. Believe it or not, the color, even though the flavor was exactly the same, because there's something subliminal about seeing
Absolutely.
It, the color of cola.
That it didn't taste like cola to you,
didn't taste right.
Did it taste like Zima? Because I know you were big on that.
I hated Zima. They also made, for a little while, there was something called Pepsi AM, which was Pepsi marketed this as like breakfast Pepsi. Hey, you can have Pepsi for breakfast now.
You know, you could have Pepsi for breakfast any day.
Anytime you want. Yeah.
I never remembered that.
That one didn't last long at all. Didn't last long. It says, Crystal Pepsi is back in all of its clear caffeine-free glory, but do not rush to your grocery store. You have to win the soda. Pepsi is giving away 13,000 six-packs of Crystal Pepsi in a special sweepstakes. I guarantee you this will be something you can find on eBay, and it'll be like 10 times its normal price for just regular Pepsi, just without the food coloring.
But why do I have a feeling that you can only get it through the sweepstakes, but then right after the sweepstakes, it'll be readily
it'll be more
available?
I bet they do. If this is a hit, if enough people want in on this, Pepsi's not stupid, right?
No,
they'll figure out a way.
For a long time.
It says, you may remember the product, Crystal Pepsi, as the short-lived soda that disappeared from the shelves all the way back in 1993. Pepsi hinted at the drink's return back in June when competitive eater Kevin Straley started a social media movement asking for its comeback. That time has come. Nostalgic soda seekers can enter the Crystal Pepsi sweepstakes by joining the free Pepsi Pass program and using their Pepsi Pass app. So I'm out.
I have no room on my phone for a new app.
Sorry, Pepsi. Wendy, she doesn't have the room. Can't do it.
And I've had, which is the Pepsi product that is the lemon lime?
Is it Slice? Isn't it still Slice? I think so.
Yeah, because I used to drink 7-Up all the time. Now, I guess Sprite. That's
Sprite
the Coca-Cola.
Is Coke, yeah.
Do people really keep track of that other than you?
Just me. And I don't know why. I've never been called upon by a beverage company to consult with them, but for some reason in my head, I like to keep track of these things. I have no idea why. I just know, because you were with me on this one, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, for years made Reese's Crunchy, and they were the best candy ever. They were so incredible. And then they brought them back, but in
only
kind of
at
a limited
Walgreens.
Form. Yeah.
That's the only place I have ever seen them. Yeah. And I kind of, that's how I do things. I binge because I brought them in. We were having them frequently.
Right.
I was having them more frequently. And now I haven't even thought about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I roll, Bill.
It is, isn't it?
Yet I still like you after all these years.
I don't understand why. The one that I begged for, the one I couldn't wait for them to bring back, and they did, and it was a disaster. KFC had these things, Chicken Littles, for a while that were like, it was like a White Castle hamburger, but a little mini chicken sandwich.
Oh, like a biscuit and a...
Was
it on a biscuit?
It wasn't really on a biscuit. It was almost like on a bun, like a White Castle style bun, but a little chicken in the middle. And then they brought it back a few years ago, but they changed it. It was all different. It wasn't as good. And it fizzled. It just came and went. People want the original. If you have something and it's working, don't mess with it.
You know, the things that you want to come back, were here.
I know. It's all real stupid stuff. Like Shake a Puddin'. Why don't they bring back Shake a Puddin'? That's what I want.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
I love
Do you remember
Shake
that?
A Puddin'.
What was
Wasn't
Shake
so
a Puddin'?
Good? It was pudding. You would like put it in a bag and shake it, and then miraculously, nobody knows how.
You didn't add water, right? You just shook it.
You just shook it.
That's
all you did was shake it.
Unnatural things are in that to make it happen.
I don't think there was a single natural thing.
I'll just tell you, the butterscotch was old natural.
The butterscotch was the best of the shake of puddings. I'll do another one, and you'll remember this one.
I love this one. I know where you're going.
Jell-O 1-2-3.
I'm telling you, we used to go to my grandmother's house every Sunday after church for really dried out meat that my aunt would make.
Yeah.
But it would all be okay because she'd make that Jell-O 1-2-3, and it was a parfait, and you'd go, oh my God, aunt spent all day.
Nope.
It really did it on its own.
It was science can't even explain Jell-O 1-2-3 because you'd have
your Jell-O on the bottom.
Right, right.
And then like a mid-range was kind of like, Jell-O meets what?
It was like a foamy Jell-O, right? Was
that foamier? Because the very top was the foamiest.
Oh, that was the really foamy one. Yeah, it was. How do you describe it? It was whatever's between foamy and non-foamy. Kind of foamy. It was kind of foamy Jell-O.
You had your regular gelatin on the bottom, the
right.
Jell-O, and then it was a mixture of foamy meets Jell-O,
right.
And then just foamy on the top.
Right.
Three layers. Jell-O
right.
1-2-3.
So they made that for years. We all loved it.
Oh, my God.
And they stopped making it. Thanks, Obama. And then they brought it back for a little while. It was back for a little while. And everyone's like, the world is the way it's supposed to be. And then you know how Jell-O is? Nope. Gone. You can't have any more 1-2-3 Jell-O.
It's Bill Cosby's fault.
Could be Bill Cosby's fault.
That's what that's why they discontinued it, because Bill Cosby would go, a 1, a 2, a 3 pills.
Right. Right.
Hope Louis Anderson uses that tonight.
He's listening.
Patrick, you're listening to this craziness, and Pepsi, Crystal Pepsi is back.
Yeah, I think they were actually just cleaning out one of their warehouses and found a pallet, and that's why they're only giving away 1,300.
Right.
So that stuff is like how many years old?
Well, the last time it was out, it says here, the last time that you could get Crystal Pepsi was 1993.
It was a very good year.
That's 22 years ago, so it's going to have a little dust on it. When you drink it, you got to wash off the dust.
Yeah, but it ages good. It'll keep.
It's like wine.
Patrick, do you even remember it?
Oh, yeah, I remember it.
It was really popular. It was so popular, yeah.
I don't know if it was that popular, because if it was, they wouldn't have, you know, shelved it.
Well, that's why I don't understand why they did shelve
well,
it.
Well, in your eyes, it was very popular.
Right. That's how I gauge. If I like something, it's very popular. If I don't care for it, nobody wants it.
Thank you, Patrick. Have a good holiday.
Thank you.
Like the Kardashians, not popular. I use me as a barometer.
You're a bellometer.
It's my own straw poll.
Your what?
It's a straw poll. I ask myself a question, and if I like it, it's popular. So it's done.
I like how you operate. I really
Thank
do.
You.
There were also these toaster pizzas, and I know when we get going on these things, this always comes up, and I don't remember the name, but it was like they have those toaster strudels.
Oh, yeah, I know those.
This was a round thing that was much like because the innards of a toaster strudel is fruit. The innards of this was pizza material. So you would toast it.
Who made this?
I don't remember. I was not a brand
whore
like you were.
Well, then, because you can write them a nasty letter campaign if they stop making it.
This is 40 years ago.
I'd still get on that. It's never too late. I keep wanting them to recall Herbert Hoover. I'm still waiting to hear back on that. All right, let's do a break. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Phil and Wendy, WGN. So we're trying to figure out what foods or drinks were available for a while, and then they stopped making them. I've said this before. Every time I really like something, if I tell somebody, hey, you know what you got to try? Try this. They stop making it the next day. That happens all the time.
You are the kiss of death.
I guess I am.
There's another Pepsi item that I don't remember either. And Matthew, what is it?
I don't remember Pepsi Crystal at all, but Pepsi Blue was really big for me when I was a kid.
I remember Pepsi Blue, and the can was blue, but what the Pepsi itself wasn't blue, was it? They wouldn't do that, would they?
Yeah, the Pepsi was blue.
It was
like blue raspberry Pepsi.
I'm not quite sure what flavor it was, but it used to come in clear plastic bottles.
Yeah,
And it was blue Pepsi. Huh.
Who's drinking Pepsi thinking, this is good, but it'd be really good if it was blue?
Someone like you?
Maybe.
I guess so.
I guess there's something to that. All right.
Well, thanks for taking us down
memory
lane.
Pepsi Blue. That's when NYPD Blue was the number one show. People wanted the drink that would reflect that.
Diane, are you listening to the show, and why are you listening to the show?
Because you guys make me so happy.
Oh, thank you. You're sweet. Thank you so much.
Do you remember these toaster pizzas I speak of?
They were probably my favorite food of my childhood, and I have told several people over the years that if there's one thing they could bring back, that would be it. They were called snackwiches.
Does that sound right, Wendy?
Yeah.
Snackwiches? Yeah.
They were like bread with no crust on it and like pizza in the inside, and you put it in the toaster, or Mom put it in the toaster.
Yeah, because they wouldn't let us operate the toaster back then.
No.
Now they don't care.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is it. And because, you know, they make Uncrustables now, which is like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that the crust is removed. And it's basically like a little round item, and the ends are crimped. So the peanut butter and jelly stays in there, and they're frozen. You can put it in a kid's lunch bag, and by the time lunch comes, they've thawed out.
Right.
You're right, Diane. That's what those toaster pizzas were like. They were round. They were delicious. And they were before the pizza puff. I had never seen a pizza puff at a fast food place until after these were.
So these were in the 70s, roughly, would you say? Sometime in the 70s, yeah? All right.
Yes.
And no one's ever tried to make them again. Why wouldn't they make those? Those seem easy.
I don't know. I wonder who made them. We could start putting their phone lines.
All right. If somebody knows, call us. We'll get to the bottom of this.
Thank you, Diane. And someone said that they were indeed called snackwiches and possibly made by Green Giant.
Oh, yeah. That seems like you're not buying into that?
No, but I do have a recipe for Jell-O 1-2-3, which someone corrected us and said 1-2-3 Jell-O.
When I was a kid, I always called it 1-2-3 Jell-O, but anytime I bring it up to anybody else, they go, "You mean Jell-O 1-2-3." So I don't know why we were saying it in dyslexic fashion, but we always did.
Did you look up the box? Because it is Jell-O 1-2-3.
Oh, it is?
And the Food Network actually has a flashback to the old favorite layered Jell-O dessert. Forget all the blender and ice cube versions. Here's the simplest way to have fun with your Jell-O, and it involves Jell-O, boiling water, and Cool Whip. So shall we post this on our
page?
Yeah,
put the recipe up there.
All right,
we're going to get a billion hits.
Not on the web.
Maybe not.
People are just going to walk up and hit us.
Right. It would be our normal average anyway. All right. Yeah,
yeah.
Let's put it on
Food.
There.
Food.com. We will post the recipe. Make your own Jell-O 1-2-3 layered dessert.
Yep. The one I always wanted them to bring back was from Aunt Jemima, and it was the cinnamon sticks that you'd put in the toaster. It looked like three surfboards fused together. They were shaped like surfboards.
They also had cornbread versions
of
those.
Yeah, they did.
Which, oh my God, they were so good.
Wait, are those gone?
They haven't made those for 25 or 30 years.
No, my kids used those were around when my kids were eating French
toast.
Were
they?
French
no,
toast
these
sticks?
Aren't French no. toast sticks. They were shaped like surfboards.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Three of them kind of, there was a perforation in the
yep.
middle. For some people, you couldn't eat all three. So you go, I'll just go with the two surfboards. Thank you very much.
Who could not eat all three?
I could eat six or nine if I wanted. Just stack them up. I'll eat them all. That's why they stopped making
Hang
them.
Loose. Little sing. Billy's coming.
Right. Do, 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 do. I would sing surfing
the safaris,
songs.
Yes.
And I would eat those.
You have lost your mind.
Probably. That's all right.
I'm glad you have.
I don't need
it's
it.
Fun, isn't it?
I don't need it. All right, so there's a couple more calls. Can we talk to Steve? Because Steve has one that I love.
Me too.
Oh.
Steve, go ahead.
Hey, I was sure Bill would remember. I didn't know about Wendy, but PDQ, those little crystals in that tall glass jar with the metal lid.
Weren't those good? PDQ chips, right?
I used
yeah,
to
but you
put them
mixed
in my
them
mouth
in...
and let them melt in my
yeah.
mouth so my mouth wouldn't open anymore.
Wait a minute.
It stood for pretty darn quick because
yeah.
you would make chocolate milk or they had strawberry, I think, as well.
Yes, they did.
And the
then
crystals
seasonally,
would...
Seasonally, they had the eggnog flavor, too.
Did they have eggnog flavored? Oh,
yep.
I missed those.
And then, I don't know if you remember, but underneath the lids of the jars, they had collectible stickers, too. I think Marvel Comics had some stickers. And
really?
Were, like famous cars. Because I remember you open up the lid and you open up underneath and you peel off to see what sticker was in there. That was in the 80s, though. I think that was something when they tried to bring it back.
Yeah, but it wasn't made to be straight, right? You were supposed to mix it with milk
or something. You're supposed to,
right.
Yeah.
Or if you sprinkled it on ice cream, it was awesome.
Right.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Where were you when I was in the 80s?
Well, you know what that's like, Steve? I'm sure you'll remember this if you remember PDQ was they made these discs called fizzies that you'd put in water and then it would become soda pop. It would fizz up and become soda. But we would just put it on our tongues and eat it that way.
Crackle them, yep.
Yeah, like carbonated Eucharist or something.
Boy, can you tell that none of us had iPhones when we were growing up?
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much, Steve. Have a good holiday.
You too.
Take care. All right, we have to take a break because they still make breaks. So we'll take a break, and then Steve will give you the news, and then we have a lot more show ahead, including Ronnie Spector. Stick around to Spill and Ronnie WGN. Steve, thank you so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. I've been looking forward to this for about a week now. This is the meeting of science fiction and science coming together the way we all knew it would eventually. Josh Bocanegra joins us right now. He's the founder and CEO of a company called Humai, where their mission is to reinvent the afterlife. Hello, Josh. How are you?
Hi. I'm good.
Josh,
how are you?
Couldn't be better. Do me a favor before anything else. Does this fall under the term? We've heard about cryogenics for years and years and years. Is your company a cryogenically based?
Cryogenic.
Cryogenic. Cryogenic? Is it one of those firms where dead people can come back?
No, it's not. However,
it's not.
We are. I'm actually going to Arizona tonight to meet with the CEO of a cryonics company to discuss a partnership between us.
What is the difference between them and what you do?
Well, what we need them to be able to preserve a body after it's dead because it's the best option we have for any kind of hope that we can restore a body or a brain.
Deep freeze it, baby. Right?
Is that true?
I mean, you freeze it.
Yeah.
So, and the kind of the caveat for resurrecting any kind of human would be that the person would have to be preserved using cryonics technology before we can actually do that. We can't really take someone who's been dead for years, you know, in the ground and do it that way. They have to be dessert first.
They can't be in any form of decomposition.
Cryogenics.
They can't be decomposed in any way, shape, or form, because really then you're going to be bringing zombies back.
Right.
Right, exactly. And all right. It's super difficult, if this wasn't even difficult at first.
So somebody has to come to you and say,
I'm dying.
I need to be frozen. They can't be dead yet. You have to do this prior to their passing, correct?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, however, the best case scenario would be that the technology would be well advanced enough to where if someone wants to ultimately kind of transplant their brain as a living person to a bionic body, that we can do that. But however, we're not going to do that until the technology is at the place where we feel confident enough to do that.
All right. How do you say the name of your company again? It's Humay?
You know, it's Humay.
Okay.
But when you say it quickly, it sounds like Humay anyways. So either way is good.
All right.
All right. So Hugh and a Mai Tai kind of thing. Humay founder and CEO, Josh Bocanegra. What are you, a scientist? What do you do that all of a sudden you said, I am going to do this. I'm going to start a company called Humay, and I'm going to freeze people, and then I'm going to bring them back someday.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not a scientist. I'm an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur all my life, and I've been doing independent research along with a few others for the past 7 years. I just never felt confident enough to be able to talk about what I want to do to the public. What I want to do, all I'm doing, is organizing people who are smarter than me, who are using the technology now to do amazing things, forming them and organizing them together to accomplish this overall mission. So I'm just the guy that's organizing the guys that need help, and I'm just supporting their research and, again, organizing all the efforts to achieve this overall mission.
Josh, let's say that Wendy, as a Christmas gift to me, gives me a gift certificate to Humay, so I can be cryogenically frozen.
When you're gone, I'll be ready for you to be gone.
And then are you? All right, so once you freeze me, and as a side question,
don't tease me.
Once you freeze me, do not tease me. That's what my tramp stamp says. Where will I be? You're not just, will you keep me in a room, a frozen room? Where will I be kept?
What we hope to do is really establish a partnership with Alcor. Alcor is basically a life extension foundation. It's in Arizona. Again, I'm meeting with the CEO tomorrow.
All right.
And what they do is they essentially freeze the body and they keep it in their laboratories where they they preserve. They call them patients, and they're just there inside of kind of like a tube. Along sometimes with other bodies, and sometimes they're alone.
I'd rather be alone, thank you.
I'm a very
private, even in death or in frozen, I'd like my privacy.
I want to be around lots of people.
Can Wendy have a room with a lot of people and I just have like a suite or something upstairs? I don't want to be with a lot of people.
Make sure there's a weight room. Bill likes to work out.
I do like to work out.
But now, do you have to? Now, I know this is really weird.
This will be the weird part of the interview. Listen to this part. All right, go on, Wendy.
All right, but you know, like, I've had a knee replacement, and it's amazing to me how quickly your muscles atrophy. So if you're dead and you're frozen, does somebody have to come in and move your limbs so your muscles don't atrophy?
Right.
Or in the cryonic state, is everything preserved?
Yeah, in the cryonic state, everything is preserved. To restore the body is really the more difficult part. And to do so, we're going to need technology such as nanotech that can preserve every part of the body. But, you know, however, most people are actually just preserving their head and not their body. Because
just the head.
Who did that?
Ted Williams did that.
Is that really true?
I think it is true.
I'm not sure about Ted Williams, but a lot of people have already. And some people prefer that because they feel like, well, when the time comes that I want to be restored, I may not need my biological body. And, you know, so
I'd like to have a better body. put, you know, like...
That's going to cost you extra, though.
Oh, that's all right. But now, don't you have to keep the brain activity going? So do you have to connect it to something? Does my electrician Pete's coming over today. Do I have to have him rig something up to keep my brain? Because, Bill, you laugh at me,
no,
but there's
Well, I do normally, but in this case, you're right. You want to keep the brain entertained or something, or at least stimulated, don't you?
Exactly.
Well, when the brain, in a moment of death, after we basically preserve the brain, and by we, actually, I should say Alcor,
yeah.
After they do so, the brain activity is just frozen in time. I mean, ultimately, you're dead, and what we would have to do is restore all that functionality back. So, yeah, that's the most difficult part, but that's what we're dedicated to trying to do.
And that's what cryogenics is, right?
You know, there's this kind of debate where they argue that there's a difference between cryonics and cryogenics. Cryogenics is just, I think, the method of deep freezing, but they don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that you can also restore a living creature. Cryonics is, I would say, more precise. They're using cryogenics technology, but the theory is that you can restore whatever the creature.
It's my body, and I'll get cryogenics if I want to. That's the song I'll sing the whole time I'm there.
No wonder you're going to be alone.
I'll be all by myself, Wendy, and it'll be chilly in there. Could I get a windbreaker on me or something? It's going to be cold in there.
Listen, I know we're goofing around about this, but this definitely could happen, but not for the next 30 years, probably, correct?
Yeah, that's the timeline. It's basically, you know, technology is advancing at an incredible rate right now, and it's because of exponential growth. It's basically, you know, you create one piece of technology, and then the next technology kind of feeds on the technology that came before. So it kind of works with previous technology, and then as it keeps going, technology gets advanced faster and faster. And the theory that this technology will be possible within 30 years is also shared by other scientists and futurists, such as Ray Kurzweil is one. I think there's a documentary about him called Transcendent Man, where he talks a lot about this stuff, and he even discusses resurrecting his own dad later on using some of the technologies that's going to be available in 30 years. He also predicted a ton of other really interesting things. So I would suggest you guys check that out.
All right.
Really cool documentary.
All right.
Okay, and you know, sometimes when you put ice cream in your freezer and you don't eat it for a while, there's that leathery, crappy stuff and crystallization
like
on the top.
Freezer burn.
Yeah, I mean, don't you have to protect these bodies against freezer burn?
You know, I don't know enough on chronics to really talk about it with a lot of confidence. What I would do eventually is once we form a partnership with Alcor,
yeah,
they would be the ones to answer most of those questions because they're experts in that field.
But people, even I don't know how you're doing in terms of people signing up or even being already frozen or anything. But this has been going on for years. People have been already frozen, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then is this true, Jack? I've read two different articles about this. They say they have that technology now, obviously, to freeze people. The problem is they're not quite sure how to unfreeze people successfully. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
I would want that little problem solved before I went in for the freezing. That's the part that I would want to know for sure is solved.
Are you
idea?
Go ahead, Josh. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say with just the idea and the reason why people kind of have already became members for Alcor in particular is because whether or not the technology exists, at least if you're dead, at least there's some kind of hope that in the near future something will be created.
Right.
So generally, that's what people kind of think going into it.
That's a positive attitude.
I got to ask you, Josh, are you taking money from people? I mean, I'm just curious. Are people like putting a deposit down to, because this is 30 years in the making.
Right.
No, we're not taking any money at all. Alcor charges for their membership to get people signed up. They do it with their life insurance, or they can pay with cash. But us in particular, we're not taking any money.
You are
from
not.
Anyone. Not
all
even
right.
investors right
oh,
now.
Oh, okay. All right. I could just go to you store it. They could just keep me in there for a couple of months and see what happens.
I'm going to keep you in there for a couple of months.
Right. But this, I mean, really, what we're hoping, Josh, I mean, even though now it's so foreign to us, we're all hoping that at some point in the future, this is just a normal everyday thing, aren't we?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much more to even think about after we can even accomplish this first goal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of questions such as, like, you know, about the bionic body, like what's going to happen to, you know, artificial eyes? Will Apple get in the business of artificial eyes and come out with a, you know, product every year, software updates for artificial eyes?
You know they will.
They will. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Retina display, all these kind of things. So there's even more to even talk about, and also ethics and relationships and how we feel, and it's a lot of things to think about. But
well, that's
ultimately,
the,
I know the.
That's the part that's weird, because think about it. Because of a timeline, you could be frozen. Let's say you have a disease and you're frozen when you're 35 years old, and then they find a cure 30 years later, but you have kids. You'd be young. You'd come back and you'd be younger than your kids. Right?
Right.
Still a few kinks in the system.
There's still some kinks, yes. That's true. They're working on them.
Go ahead, Josh. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. No, I was just going to say that some of the potential issues, I think if we can solve the problem, I think that would overshadow some of those issues to the point where we can probably figure those issues out eventually. I mean, we're going to have to one way or the other.
Right.
How old are you, Josh? You mind me asking?
I'm 25. I'm going to be 26 next month on the 26th.
Right. And aside from this, you have created some beats for some hip hop artists, and you've also created the Love Room.
What's the Love Room?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
That's where you go to be frozen, but not by yourself.
That was hilarious.
What is the Love Room?
Love Room is, you know, I always want to work on social innovation and ways to help change society for the better.
Yeah.
And that's usually very difficult, but that's just what I personally feel passionate about. And when I started Love Room, at first, even the name was just kind of something I just thought of real quick, just posted a page up online to see what people think about the general idea. And what I didn't know was that the media and some journalists would pick it up and consider it as a actual site that's going to launch really soon. And so when they picked it up, they misinterpreted it, and they kind of, I got a lot of press for it, but it kind of came out the wrong way.
Right. Forbes magazine actually said it was sort of an Airbnb home rental system for people who wanted to rent a place where the other guests would be attractive.
Yeah.
But the business didn't exist. You were kind of just starting an online site?
Yeah, no, exactly. I described it in that way because generally in the startup world, you always want to kind of give an example of two different existing services so that way people can understand
right. What
you're trying to do. And so my examples were Airbnb and Tinder, OkCupid, but they took that as if I'm trying to get people to come together and hook up, and as if that was the sole purpose. So unfortunately, it just got misinterpreted. However, there's actually a TV show in development now with a major TV network for Love Room that I think is going to be called Love Room. And that should be coming out, I think, later next year.
But you have nothing to do with it. You don't get any part of that.
I'm considered a creator of the show.
Oh, all right.
He's getting a little something.
A piece of it, yeah.
Boy, 25 years young and just trying to do something and move it and shake it, because technology and cryogenics, all that stuff is definitely happening. Interesting talking to you, Josh.
Thank you. I'm trying my best. I really appreciate you guys talking to me.
Absolutely. Have a good holiday. Take care.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much.
Great new year.
You as well. Josh Bocanegra. Although I got to be honest with you, Josh, if you're still there, I think I'm more confused now than before we had you.
Oh, how'd that happen? That happens. That's all right.
But interesting. Have a nice holiday. Thank you so much, Josh.
All right. Let's do this. A quick break. More show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. 773 says there was a Simpsons episode where they show the future Mr. Burns was in a cryo freeze waiting for a cure to his cause of death.
Yes.
They had cured 31 stab wounds, but he had 32 stab
wounds.
He was thawed out to go as Smithers' guest to Lisa Simpson's wedding. He broke in half after not having been thawed correctly.
Right.
I don't really understand what this this Hugh Mai is.
I'm not 100% sure either. I know they're in conjunction with a cryogenic firm, but I don't understand what the partnership is. Do you? You asked the question at some point, but it wasn't really fully answered. And that's why I'm waiting till next year to give them my money. I'm going to wait one more year.
He's not taking money, though.
Right.
I don't really understand what happened. Somebody said Futurama, too, that they had a whole bunch of heads of celebrities. And what else is Futurama going to be
predicting? Factual?
Yes.
I'm almost, you know, we brought up Ted Williams. That's the baseball great. I'm like 95% sure that he had just his head cryogenically frozen. I'm almost positive.
Is there a siren going on?
There's weird, like, alien
noises.
I don't think the listeners can hear it. We can hear it here in the studio. There's like whale mating calls outside. You hear those, right?
Let me see. I just want to see if we can hear.
I don't think listeners can hear it.
Now they can.
Yeah? I don't know what's doing it.
Sounds like a circular buzzsaw.
Yeah, it's like a drill or something.
Is that what it is?
Construction.
Yeah. Ah, the hustle and bustle of the Christmas holiday.
Isn't it something? It's magical.
I'm actually making Tyrex up here to give away for the holidays.
That's perfect timing.
I'm sorry, I didn't think you could hear that.
Yeah, no problem, Steve.
Steve's going to give you the news in just a little bit, and then the great Ronnie Spector joins us right after Steve's news. Stay here, it's WGN.
Recognize this wonderful voice
just a little bit. Yep,
we were lucky enough to talk to the legendary Ronnie Spector last year. She will be putting together Ronnie Spector's best Christmas party ever again this Sunday night at the Arcata Theater. You can go to oshows.com. I believe there are some tickets still available. Ronnie, how the heck are you?
Wendy, I am so great. I mean, we just finished a UK tour where it was phenomenal.
All right, so where were you in London? Where were you?
Well, we were in Liverpool, of course. We were in Glasgow. We were in Scotland. I mean, we just went all over the place. Newcastle. We were all over the place.
And
Birmingham.
Do you find it to be true when you perform in other countries? Great music is great music. No matter where you are in the world, people know it, they understand it, and they love it, right? It doesn't change from country to country, does it?
It absolutely doesn't. I mean, I can be in Japan, and they don't know it's a word of English,
yeah.
And they know Be My Baby, Baby. They can sing it to me in the audience. It's like amazes me, you know. And then when they come backstage, I don't understand a word they're saying. They only know my records, you know.
Oh.
Amazing, you know.
Well, your Christmas album is playing in our house every year. I told you this last year when we wrap Christmas
Mine
presents. I believe it because it's just beautiful. Nothing says Christmas more than your Christmas album. We were at the Arcata Theater last year. My husband.
I remember you, Wendy. You came with your husband and your family.
I did.
I remember.
I got to tell you the honest to God truth. Talk to the people about Amy Winehouse and how she kind of changed the way you thought about things. Because when you did your tribute to Amy, I my son elbowed me and said, "Dad's crying." And I said, "What?" And I looked at him, and he's crying. As I look at him, my eyes are watering.
It got pretty emotional, huh?
Oh, my God. How did Amy Winehouse make a difference in your life?
Well, she made me feel that what I did mattered. I mean, she wanted to wear hair like mine. She wanted to wear her eyeliner like I wore it in the 60s. And she loved girl groups, you know, especially the Ronettes, because of our long black hair and the beehives. So she really made me feel like today I matter. You know, not in the 60s, because she wanted to be me from the style of the 60s. So it was like a great feeling. That's why I recorded Back to Black after, when she passed, because she meant so much to me, you know?
Did you get to meet her in person, Ronnie, or just through reputation?
I did, and I met her over in London, and she was so sweet and so shy. As a matter of fact, a couple of days ago when we were in the UK, her mother, Janice Winehouse, came to my show. And gave me her book. She came backstage, and I mean, it's so emotional. She's crying, and I mean, this is like a few days ago. I'm choking up now. And Mrs. Winehouse, she said, "Don't call me Mrs. Winehouse. Call me Janice." You know, I said, okay, Mrs. Winehouse. You know, but she was beautiful, and I loved Amy. And I particularly loved that I love her voice.
Yeah.
She had her own style. I mean, of course, you have to take from somebody like I took from Frankie Lyman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she took the style, but she had an amazing voice.
She really
did.
And
people don't, you know what I mean? They forget that she had a great voice. It was like my mind different. Not better than other singers, just different.
Can you explain the shine? You just pointed out that Amy Winehouse had a shyness. So how is somebody able to go on stage and entertain countless people, but then sometimes you're in a room with two or three and you just can't function because of shyness? Well, how can that be?
Well, I'm the same way.
Are you?
That's why I know it's so real, because I could. But Amy, you have to remember, she was on alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And that can, you know, performer cannot, you know. I mean, I can't drink or do drugs.
Yep.
That's my motto. If you go on stage like that, then you really don't know who you are. You know, you have to go on sober focus to know who you are and give your best to the audience. And unfortunately, Amy didn't get that chance.
Hmm.
She was 27 when she died. How young is that? I mean, you know?
No. She was so fantastic in what she did, but she hadn't even blossomed yet. She hadn't matured as a singer-songwriter.
Well, same with me. When I was younger than Amy when I had my hits.
Oh, my God. What, 17 years old? You left home. How old were you when the Ronettes?
I never left home. As a matter of fact, my mother traveled with the Ronettes because there were so many guy groups out at the time. You know, we were smothered like. So, what was your question again? I'm sorry.
So, how old were you? 17 years old when the Ronettes were.
Well, I was 16. We were on Colpix Records, but you know, we didn't make any hits with them. And then we met Phil, and that'd be my baby, and the rest, as they say, is history. You know, but we started very young.
And your mom,
we did too. But
Your mom was in a group called the Momettes for a little while, wasn't she, Ronnie? I seem to remember.
Mom?
Yeah,
Momettes.
I thought that. I could be wrong.
I don't know. I don't think so. She did travel with us and make sure we were okay and stuff like that. You know, fix our hair. You know, my mother had six sisters, so it wasn't hard for the Ronettes to have that style and all that stuff. Because they had one aunt was a hairdresser. You know, the beehive, the whole thing, and being half breeds, everything was sort of different with our look, the Ronettes looks in most girl groups and stuff. So I think that's all of that took out of, you know, other groups. But we weren't better than other groups, just different.
Yeah.
And I got, when you talk about your hair, I saw you live in action last year at the Arcata Theater. You got some big hair on top of your head, woman, and I really idolize that. In fact, The Guardian did a nice little write-up saying that you have a more relaxed version of the famous beehive, but still big enough to house a family of small animals.
Oh.
It's so funny. Someone sort of told me that because I don't read any of my reviews. And I thought that was adorable.
It is. And, you know, you do that because you want people to talk about it. It's not like, you know, you're going to be offended.
What? Wendy, that's not true. I never do anything to make people notice me.
But
even with the Ronettes, you know, we didn't do that. I don't try to make my hair bigger and to make people come and see what it's all about. That's just me. You know, I'm from Spanish Harlem, and I grew up with Puerto Rican girls and the Spanish girls and the black girls, and I love their look. And I've been looking this way for a long, long time.
But, I mean, you're not offended when someone says your hair is big, because, man, when I think back to the 80s when I don't even know how I made my hair that big. It involved a lot of back combing and tons of hairspray. Yes.
Yeah, Aquanet. I was going to say Aquanet. That saved us, the Ronette. You know, when we wore the beehives, if we didn't have that Aquanet to keep it up, you know, we were in trouble.
Ronnie, I know we live in a digital world now, but you've been doing this a long time, and for so many years, it's just sounded so beautiful. Do you think the music sounds better on vinyl, or are you willing to accept that it's digital and it's just as good?
I think all music is good. You know, I don't mean all music. Some music I don't like.
Yeah.
But I like women of today, like Taylor Swift, people that stand up for their own. You know, she doesn't try to look like anybody else. She doesn't try to dress like anybody else. She writes her own songs. You know, those kind of women I really admire today that are coming out and making their own money. I mean, in the 60s, we just didn't make that kind of money.
Sure.
People didn't write or produce or you know, published, and you didn't even know that that's where the big money came from.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it came from our live shows.
Nope, not, did. Not necessarily, huh?
Well, no, I found out years and years later, but I didn't know all of that. I just thought, you know, if you made a hit record and they heard it on the radio, people would automatically come see you sure. and pay you. So that I never thought about royalties and writing and publishing. It never dawned on me until a few years ago, if you get my drift.
Yep.
I mean, you know. Yep. So.
Well, it's happening this Sunday night, Ronnie Spector's best Christmas party ever.
I'm going to have a ball. I can't wait. Mm. I can't. This is my second show I'm going to be doing for Christmas. So I'm like so anxious and so like happy. And I love Christmas, by the way, guys. I've loved Christmas since I was like 5. My daddy would take me to the corner of Broadway and get us the Christmas tree, you know, for the house.
Yeah.
Everything about Christmas I love. Santa, I was in love with Santa. I thought Santa lived on top of Macy's. And he would go inside in the summer, yeah. And then he'd come out in the winter. Because we couldn't afford things like going inside of Macy's. I remember this doll I wanted so badly. So my mom said, okay, I'll go wait online. And it was the longest line for me to sit on the lap with Santa. So I finally got to sit up there with Santa. I said, Santa, I want that doll in the window. Oh, ho, ho, lady, well, oh, little girl. When you get to the, you know, when you get home for Christmas morning, I'm sure it'll be there. Of course it wasn't.
Oh,
you
know, no.
Well, it was expensive, and he was just a Santa. And years later, I saw all these other Santas. I thought there was only one Santa that lived on top of Macy's. You know, and I thought he came out, you know, when Christmas came.
Yeah.
Off the roof of Macy's, and he came out. And when the snow was snowing and stuff, I had no idea until I got older and saw not one Santa, there's another Santa, and there's another. You know, it's so confusing as a kid.
It's beautiful.
Well, I'll tell you, these songs, Frosty the Snowman, Sleigh Ride, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, Frosty, just you have been on ASCAP's list of the top 20 most played holiday songs for how many years?
I don't know, like 25. I'm like so amazed because we did that record in 1963.
Jeez.
So to have, you know, to get in my car now to go grocery shopping and hear Sleigh Ride or Frosty, I'm like, you know, you want to pull over, and I do.
You crank it, don't you, when you hear it in your car? You crank that music because I'm telling you, it's the best Christmas music.
Wendy, that's exactly right. I crank it up. As a matter of fact, I go to the side and park, you know, because it's years ago, and I only hear it once a year, and I only sing my Christmas stuff once a year. Even my regular stuff, if I be my baby, I'll pull over and listen to it, you know, because I love my songs. I gave birth to those songs
sure.
in the studio, so I love them. Most people, I hate singing my same song that I did years ago. I love, every time I sing my hit songs, it's like I'm doing them for the first time. Walking in the Rain, you know, Baby, I Love You. Be My Baby, of course. It's like I'm walking on stage for the first time every time. And that's the greatest feeling I get.
And as...
They're going to finally hear Be My Baby live, you know, like they haven't heard me for years. I'm silly.
But being in the audience, Ronnie, you really bring it, sister. I got to tell you. And she will be this Sunday night at the Arcata Theater. My son Dylan is turning 13 years old on the 13th. And we went last year with my redheaded son, Michael. We got to meet you. And Dylan says,
I remember he had red hair.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Dylan says, you know, Mom, for my golden birthday, I'll be 13 on the 13th. Can we please go see Ronnie Spector again? So we will be there, and I'm bringing a couple boxes of Kleenexes because I'm telling you, I am touched
to
the soul.
Sure,
Wendy,
it is.
You may not have to do that this time because this is a happy Christmas show. I'm going to be singing for you, the snowman and all. So it's not going to be, you know, I don't think you need many tissues. Maybe one.
Christmas music makes me cry, and then to have you sing it, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then bring your cleaner.
You don't still stuff it in your bra, so I'd have to bring my own, right?
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. I don't need to.
No, you don't.
A couple of kids. All right, well, I'm going to see you when Sunday, right?
Sunday night, we will be at the Arcata Theater.
I can't wait.
Ronnie, have a great show and a wonderful holiday season. We know how much it means to you, so the best of luck.
Happy holidays, everybody. I love you.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Okay. See you Sunday.
The great Ronnie Spector.
Thank you so much. I adore her.
What a nice lady.
Adore her. Yeah. You can go to oshows.com. Some tickets still available. And check out her website, too, ronniespector.com. That's Ronnie with an IE at the end.
Yep.
I am touched. I am her rendition of Amy Winehouse. I'm telling you, Bill.
Yeah, it's that good.
Not
isn't
a
it?
Dry eye in the house.
I can imagine. All right, a break, more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I don't know if this is the song that I...
This is Ronnie Spector, but this isn't the Amy Winehouse song, is it?
Really?
Is it?
It sounded different live at the Arcata Theater, I'll tell you that. And I know that her voice is very raspy when speaking with her.
Yes.
I am telling you, each and every one of these songs that she sang on stage... is just like you remembered it from the 60s.
Is it, yeah, she can recreate it.
It is amazing. She gets into the holiday spirit, has some Santa wardrobe things going on.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Oh, no, I'm not saying anything other than she's dressing Santa-like.
All right.
Christmassy, I guess I should say.
Yeah, okay.
And I know you love Christmas more than anyone.
Yes, I do.
Know. Maybe Ronnie Spector loves
it more.
Comes
close, yeah. All right.
She thought if Santa didn't live at the North Pole, he lived on the roof of Macy's.
That's what she was saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was wrong, but that's all right. She's been right plenty of other times. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news in just a little bit. And then we'll find out how a new business here in Chicago is doing.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yep.
It's Dispensary 33, and yes, you can get your medical cannabis if you have doctor's permission. It's not really a prescription. We'll find out more about that coming up. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy here on 720 WGN, and like it or not, medical cannabis is now legal right here in Chicago. And before everything opened, we had on a guest. Bill, you were on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, you were sitting in with me, and Zachary Zisis, who is on the line with us. And we were talking and learning a little bit about Dispensary 33, and it was going to open. Well, Zachary, yesterday was opening day for you guys, and was it everything you anticipated?
So there was a lot for us to be fearful of on our opening day. We didn't know if our software system would work. We didn't know how any of the operations were actually going to play out. And it went amazingly smoothly. You know, we had 25, 30 people waiting outside when we first opened. And obviously that was a big concern for us. How are we going to process these people through? And we did it really smoothly. You know, the waiting room, the longest wait for anybody yesterday was maybe 10 minutes total.
That's nothing.
I know. And we just had so many fears going into it, and just feel really lucky that it went as well as it did.
There was something written in the Red Eye today, and it was...
Ironically.
And one of the first people to walk through, Steve Torres, among one of the first patients to walk through the doors of Chicago's only medical marijuana dispensary, which officially opened in Uptown yesterday. Within an hour, Torres left Dispensary 33 with a bag containing 7 grams of Grace's cookies and 3.5 grams of Chicago Blue Dream. These are names of 2 of the 9 strains of marijuana for sale at the outlet. This was Torres' first legal purchase of cannabis. He hopes it will alleviate and manage symptoms of multiple sclerosis. All in all, cost him about $200.
Oh.
What are some of the other names of the strains of marijuana? And that's what we're calling it, huh?
Yeah, right. So there's no lack of creativity in the strain names. And a lot of them, for people who've been using cannabis for a while and who are passionate about what we call the genetics of it, they all have meaning. And and you say, you know, Girl Scout cookies to somebody, and, you know, there's a certain percentage of people out there whose eyes will just light up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got something called Alien Jack. We've got something called Strawberry Cough, something called Strawberry Headband. So
who names these? Come on, Zachary.
Matthew McConaughey.
I'm not the genetics guy. I don't know where this is all coming from, but I assure you, people know what it means. You know, it's coded language.
Yeah.
The likes of you and I, it's not our tongue. I'm not the product specialist here. I'm more the business guy. So
Zachary, you don't grow it. You don't put it into food form. You're strictly on the retail end of it, right? That's as far as it goes for you.
You know, in so many ways, our model should be incredibly simple.
Yeah.
You know, not only are we not growing it,
yeah,
but we're not tampering with it at all. So everything comes to us in pill bottle form. All the herb does, and all we're carrying is herb now. Not everything in the future will, but everything will come even so in a tamper evident sealed package. So in Colorado, for instance, if I were running a dispensary, I'd buy a pound of pot, and then I'd break it up into eighths and quarters and whatever else, and I would I'd sell it to people. Here, I'm just taking in a pill bottle, tracking it as my inventory, and then selling it as is.
This is some interesting statistics that I want to share, because a lot of people who smoke pot not for medicinal reasons are going, awesome, this is one step closer to legalizing pot in Illinois, perhaps. And there are other people that are horrified that such a thing happened in Illinois, where legal medical cannabis is happening. Dispensary 33 is among 12 registered dispensaries that have opened across the state in recent weeks. This is 2 years after Illinois lawmakers approved a medical marijuana program. Two more are expected to open this week. About 3,600 patients have been approved for the state program and medically certified as having one of about 40 debilitating medical conditions, including HIV, cancer, and multiple sclerosis. Zachary Zisis on the line with us, who is with Dispensary 33, located at 5001 North Clark Street, right here in Chicago. You can go to dispensary33.com. And Zachary, when you were up in the studio with us, we had so many questions, because we're unfamiliar with all this territory. And I had mentioned, you know, my mom had cancer, and yet I think had this been made available to her, I don't know that she would have partaken in it, because there's a school of thought that, oh my God, it's marijuana, it's bad.
You know, from my perspective, I know I'm living inside a little bit of a bubble, but it's so difficult for me to understand now what people's negativity about this product is on a medicinal level. People can have concerns about its use recreationally, and even there, you know, when you compare the harm that alcohol does, for instance, against cannabis, I find that argument to be, I just can't understand it. And on the medicinal side, you know, people who are suffering from conditions like cancer and who are taking incredibly powerful drugs, like the chemotherapy drugs, like opioids to treat their pain, who can otherwise find real help from their symptoms with cannabis, which is a drug that has no toxicity effectively. It is impossible to overdose on cannabis. It is literally impossible to overdose on it. No one has ever found that dosage amount that could cause that level of harm. So when I look at it from that perspective, it's very difficult for me to understand now what the negativity around cannabis is.
Zachary, how was it that you were able to secure a permit to sell this? My guess is there were a lot of people trying out for the exact same type of a thing, but somehow you got it. Why you and not somebody else?
You know, I think it's the same question in some ways for me. It's sort of the same question of like, how did I get a better SAT score than someone else? It was like an SAT test. There was a lot of pieces of a puzzle that you had to solve.
Right.
A lot of it had to do with the real estate side. A lot of it had to do with just understanding how the state thinks about things on a regulatory level and how to make sure you're satisfying what
yeah.
they need from you on a regulatory level. So there's that. And then I have a partner who just has such a thorough understanding of the product. And so we were able to, on our application side, demonstrate that level of understanding of the product and understanding of how to use that product to help patients.
What we learned before when we spoke to Zachary Zisis, and in case you weren't tuned in that day, it was kind of fascinating to me. You don't really get a prescription from your doctor per se, do you?
That's right. So a physician would be barred or disbarred or lose their license for writing a prescription for a controlled one scheduled substance, which is an illegal substance, effectively, as far as the federal government is concerned. So the way in which states are handling that is instead of having patients or instead of writing a prescription for patients, they are sort of asserting their First Amendment right to write a recommendation. And that recommendation says, you know, one, that the patient is under their care, two, that the patient qualifies, has a qualifying condition, and three, that in the physician's personal opinion, the patient can benefit from using medical cannabis.
Insurance covers any part of this?
Insurance will not cover any part of it.
None of it.
So
not yet, but you never know. You never know what might happen in the future.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. And as long as it's a Schedule I controlled substance, insurance will never cover it. But we've already seen how in Congress there has been movement towards working away from a Schedule I classification. A Schedule I, by definition, that Schedule I means it has no medicinal benefit. But the reality is even the federal government, even the National Institutes of Health has come out with studies that show medicinal value. So the only reason it's a Schedule I is purely a function of prejudice and not anything that's evidence-based.
And what are some of the other drugs in that category, like cocaine?
No, cocaine is not in there. I will admit I'm not a DEA expert. Cocaine is not in there, but I think MDMA is in there. I think historically, cocaine, I don't know if you guys have been watching a show called The Nick, but, you know, back in 1900, cocaine is what they used as an anesthesia.
Yeah,
so,
sure. You know, so that actually is demonstrably has medicinal value in that way.
These are Schedule I drugs, correct?
Right, not cocaine, but
no, it's heroin, LSD, marijuana, mescaline, which is peyote, in case you know it by that name, ecstasy, bath salts, stuff I don't even know if I've ever heard of, MDMA. I thought was the telethon that Jerry Lewis did.
MDMA telethon.
All right, so those are the substances listed in the DEA Schedule I. And another question, speaking of cocaine, I guess that's why it was on my mind. 630 said, if you have an illness that cocaine was the only cure or only drug that made you feel better, you should have the right to take it. This is all ridiculous. Could you imagine dying knowing some drug could have saved you, but because our government has it illegal, you just have to die? Kind of absurd.
Yeah, I would just say that the stakes here with cannabis, predominantly what we're doing is treating symptoms.
So it's not life or death. It's not going to cure something.
It's like being able to get out of bed and function or being in bed either so over-medicated that you can't get out or so much in pain that you can't get out of bed. That's a lot of what's at stake.
I've had a back issue for the last week, and a lot of people have said, hey, why don't you smoke some pot? And I said, because I really don't want to. I have the muscle relaxers. But then I started thinking about it. I don't smoke pot anymore, but that's probably healthier than taking these muscle relaxers and anti-inflammatories. Because it kills my stomach when I take those.
Yeah.
So, you know, really, you take the way that's going to make you feel better.
Yeah, one of the things we feel very strongly about is that people have a fundamental right to medicate according to what is best for them.
We have a question from one of the listeners. We are talking to Zachary Zisis. Dispensary 33 opened yesterday. If you have a recommendation from your doctor for medical cannabis, you can go to Dispensary 33, 5001 North Clark Street. You can also go to their website, dispensary33.com. And Zachary, we would like you to talk to Steve, who has a question for you. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'm currently a medical cannabis card holder at a different dispensary, but I'd like to know when you expect to be getting edibles and oil and that sort of thing.
Sure. So right now, as we've talked about, I think before, there are no edibles or concentrates on the market. We anticipate from what we've heard from cultivators that within the next month, those kinds of products will start rolling out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate your call. Sorry.
So it's pretty interesting the degree to which different ways of consuming cannabis can have really different effects. And there are people for whom smoking is great, and then there are people for whom that's just not the right choice for a number of reasons. One is that they don't appreciate the side effects, and two is it just doesn't deal with their symptoms nearly as well as other forms like edibles. And concentrates are sort of can be incredibly powerful, especially from people under high and pain medications. Those concentrated forms of THC can all but replace drugs like Percocet, for instance. And I've met many people who used to take many Percocets and now medicate solely with cannabis.
Zach, I know you've only been open for 2 days, but nobody's come in who you say to yourself, look, we can only sell this to people for medical purposes. I'm not positive that guy's here for medical purposes. That has not happened. You don't anticipate.
He has to see a recommendation from a doctor.
Yeah, but couldn't somebody possibly falsify something and
this
say,
this is Billy's doctor.
I all of a sudden have glaucoma.
Yes.
That could happen, right? I guess my question is, has Woody Harrelson been in the shop yet?
he and Snoop Dogg did drop by last night.
They did.
After hours. I don't want to get into that too much.
All right, that's fine.
But it also is this, it's not our job to evaluate patients. Our job is to serve them.
Hey, Walgreens won't, question me if I drop off a prescription for something. They won't say, hey, did you write this yourself?
Yeah, all right.
All right, you know what? Zachary Zisis on the line with us. Hank, can you hang on for just a second? We have to take a quick break. And then we have some listeners who have some questions. I'm telling you, I don't know anything about this medical cannabis, because I learned you're not supposed to say really medical marijuana anymore. It's medical cannabis.
Yeah.
But we'll find out more. People have questions, and it's 312-981-7200. It's Cheech and Chong here on 720 WGN. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, we're talking to Zachary Zisis of Dispensary 33, which is a medicinal cannabis dispensary, which opened yesterday. You can go to dispensary33.com or visit them at 5001 North Clark Street, Chicago, Illinois. Bill, you and I were reading something off the air, and Zach, we want to ask you a question about this. According to the Red Eye article, you guys have to log your patients or customers, I guess patients.
Yeah, patients, right? Yeah.
Into a database so they do not exceed the legal limit, which is, according to this article, 2.5 ounces per 14-day period. And some estimates equate that to about 10 cigarette-sized joints a day. It seems like a lot of weed.
Were
you just taking a hit right there? And I'm kidding.
The state feels like these are sick people who might need to medicate on a very regular basis. And so for a recreational user, 2.5 ounces is quite generous for any 2-week period. But you will find people who are in immense pain or discomfort and who effectively need to be treating with cannabis, throughout their day in order to be able to function. And in those cases, and in certain other cases, if a doctor recommends it, that allowance can actually go up from 2.5 ounces. We saw yesterday here, for instance, one of our patients had a maximum allowable usage of 5 ounces. And which I assure you, for you and me, that would just, if somebody were like, all right, here's 2 weeks, consume this, it would not be easy or fun in all likelihood. But if you're talking about, do you want to be taking morphine or do you want to be taking cannabis, that's the sort of level that patients like that are working at. Those are their choices at that level.
We're not going to have much time for your answer here, Zachary, but I was telling Bill off the air when we spoke to you earlier, what about the profit now? Because that's what people are questioning, and there's something about, can you make a profit by selling something that's not legal? I'm unclear on this, and you have about a minute, so sorry for the lack of time.
So this is like a legal question. Will the federal government let me make a profit on something they consider to be illegal?
It's just, do you make a profit for having a dispensary?
But this is now legal, so I think that is now superseded by the fact that this is legal, isn't it? You can make a profit.
It's still federally illegal, and so it's not that the federal government has come in and said you can't make a profit, but they do have special sections of their tax code to penalize us.
Oh, they do.
Just in the way that they got Al Capone on tax evasion,
right.
They sort of come after the medical cannabis industry as well with something called Code 280E, which says none of our expenses from conducting business are tax deductible.
All right. That's odd. But you're a smart guy, Zachary. You wouldn't open up a business where you knew you weren't allowed to make a profit.
Yeah, I'm certainly allowed to make a profit. I certainly cannot make a profit in all likelihood with the number of patients now. What we really need to see in this state is the number of approved conditions to be increased so that more people can be helped. And if I'm able to help more people, then hopefully I'll be able to, you know, not lose money at the very least.
All right.
There's a 34-year-old who's mentioned in this Red Eye article who has Crohn's disease, and the medical cannabis allows him to function every day. He didn't want his name published for fear of professional repercussions, which is something I'm sure a lot of employees are thinking about. But this dude says, when I'm having a bad day and my stomach is on fire and I feel sick, queasy, and nauseous, the medical cannabis made me comfortable enough to go to work. So, I mean...
Yeah.
How can you argue with it?
How can you
argue with it? There's stories like that are all over the place. Everyone who walks in here has a story like that. There are millions of people just in the state of Illinois. Well, maybe that's overstated. There are certainly hundreds of thousands of people in the state of Illinois who can receive real benefit and a real increase in their quality of life from what we're offering.
It's fascinating. And you know what? Bottom line is, if it helps people, who are we to judge? You know, we don't know when we'll be in that position. I can't speak for Bill, but those are my sentiments. Zachary Zisis, Dispensary 33. People want to go visit you. 5001 North Clark Street. Don't bother going unless you have a recommendation by your doctor. You can call them at 312-620-3333. And you can also go to the website dispensary33.com. Is that correct, Zachary?
Yes. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Zachary. Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Take care.
You guys too.
I'll think of him at 4:20 today.
Well, absolutely. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.